pleasure for you and for her. Maxtrol is the confidential, non-prescription way to get the confidence and endurance you want and she needs in bed. I'm so sure of it, I'll send it to you free for 30 days.
Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. You pay only shipping and handling. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
Spice up your Monday night. Join 101 WRIF's own Steve Black this and every Monday night throughout the rest of the 2004 season. Head to McGregor's and catch all the pro games on Sunday and Monday on the most TVs anywhere downriver. Enjoy $1 domestic crafts, $2 domestic bottles, and $3 Johnsonville brats and stadium-style nachos while you watch the game. Every Monday, watch the game with 25-cent wings. McGregor's offers the best live music in the Motor City every weekend with Rusty Lunchbox every Thursday and South 24 this Friday and Saturday. Plus, McGregor's is celebrating Hunter Widows Weekend with a Malibu-flavored rum party on Saturday. Get to McGregor's for the best live entertainment, awesome food, and the most fun atmosphere you'll find anywhere. Plus, all the football action. This Monday night, join WRIF for all the fun, including the Miller Lite Good Call Ref, and register to win a trip for two to Las Vegas, including three-night stay and round-trip airfare. McGregor's at Telegraph Road near West Road in Brownstown Township. Call them for more info at 734-675-3870. Don't forget to join Steve Black from 101 The Rift this Monday night for all the football and club keno action. Enjoy the game and win great Rift prizes this Monday night at McGregor's.
WRIF Detroit presents Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. To express your opinion, call 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Welcome to Night Call. Peter Werby here with you. And that's the music of Perfect Circle, one of the projects of the band Tool. You're not the only one. And some of us can imagine, some of us are interested in making the kind of dreams we have come true, even in the face of these ongoing nightmares. Well, we got a lot of things to talk about. 313-298-WRIF at the first part of the show. Rock Dizzy will be taking your calls. So call them up. Say you want to get on the air. You want to talk about what I'm talking about, or you want to talk about what you're thinking about. We're broadcasting all around the world on the World Wide Web. So welcome to you who are listening outside of our Detroit broadcast area. So once in a while, we'll kind of make allusions to Detroit stuff, but that's okay. You can deal with that. Now, one a little later in the show, I want to talk about the Battle of the Maps. Have you seen those maps, like the one that shows all the blue states, the ones that voted for Kerry, joined with Canada? It says United States of Canada. Then below it, Jesus Land, that's all the red states. You've probably seen that one. Then there's one on my site that has really sent everyone over. About three or four guys, sort of sore winners or sore election stealers, however you want to look at it. And it's I got to be real careful that I say this correctly. It shows the same kind of map, and I actually can't remember what it says. Oh, it says America. The blue states say America. And then the red states, all the states that went for Bush, it says dumb F-a-stan. It doesn't say it. It says what F, when you say it on the radio, what it stands for, but it's dumb F-stan. I got to be careful, because you can't say that on the air. I don't know. Maybe you can even say it right now. You know, Ralph, I should tell you that that first line is not ringing, so it's ringing now. So pick it up. Pick up line one there. Yeah. That's difficult. So here's the deal. There's censorship on the radio, as you know, and people have been fined. Janet Jackson got that $500,000 fine. Then Fox, for what's American Marriage or some crapperoo, got fined $1.2 million. So this is this conservative station, right, that promotes moral values and all. But Julie from Ann Arbor wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com and sent this Lenny Bruce quote. Lenny Bruce was this incredible comedian who broke all the boundaries back in the 50s and the 60s and essentially was hounded to death. But here's what he says, and I gotta say the censored word. And by the way, if you're ringing in now, 313-298-WRIF, be patient. So just keep letting it ring. Anyways, here's what Lenny Bruce says. Take away the right to say F, the word, right? Take away the right to say F, and you take away the right to say F the government. And that, so that's a very strong word, and one even, you know, we don't want, I mean, it's not even clear why that can't be said. It's not like it raises prurient interest in the act of sex itself, right? I mean, you're saying that in the, like the English used to say, bloody. That was the worst. That was comparable to the F word. You'd say the bloody government. Whew, man, you'd be kicked right off the air. Anyway, so we're going to talk about all of that. I got to be real careful. Dumb F-a-stan. That's the red states. So another quote, too. I was at a demonstration yesterday in Birmingham, Michigan, a wealthy suburb. And there's a group of women that call themselves Women in Black. They have groups all across the world. I'm not even 100% sure where they began. May have begun in Israel, Palestine, of Israeli and Palestinian women who call for an end to violence, and but with justice, peace and justice. They dress in black. They have silent demonstrations, usually led to the beat of a single drum. And in some places, they invite men along as well. So we're kind of like Men in Black. You know, not those guys that keep track of the space critters that come to Earth or anything like that. But they ask that everybody wear black as a sign of mourning for the unending wars and the deaths that they produce. So, and obviously, the big focus now is on Iraq and this bloody assault and on Fallujah. As we were walking down, what is it, Maple, huh? Right? Yeah, 15-mile road, Maple. Guy comes along in a big truck. Why is it always a guy in a big truck? And I'm not trying to, you know, bad rap people in big trucks. I mean, you can if you want. 313-298-WRIF. Because some of my friends have big trucks. I don't get it. I don't, you know, it used to be you drove a truck to pick up laundry, right, or to take fencing around. Now it's just a regular vehicle. I don't get it. I mean, I got a big sedan. I got a full-size car. I understand that. But a lot of my friends don't. They say, how come you're Mr. Environment and you're driving this big four-door? So I guess almost all cars are almost all four doors. I mean, some two. But it doesn't get the best gas mileage in the world. But partly it's safety. Partly it's comfort. Anyway, so we're driving. There's about 125 people marching down Maple in Birmingham, led by women dressed in black, beating this solitary drum. No one's speaking, and one of the rules are is that you can't talk, and because it's supposed to be silence and deference to the people that have died, and also you're never supposed to answer any hecklers. Mostly, I would say, and these demonstrations have been all over, everywhere from Allen Park to Warren to downtown Detroit and the Eastern Market and all around town. There's one a month. You can go to my website and check the calendar for the next one. It's, I think, December 13th or something. PeterWerbe.com, PeterWerbe.com. That's also where it has the dumb Effistan little map that offended some of these sore winners, right? Anyway, so a guy in a truck yells out, "Kill Iraqis!" Wow, man. That's what he yells, "Kill Iraqis." Now, the of all these lies and phony justifications that Bushko has used to involve us in this slaughter, now more evident than ever, most of it now revolves around we're doing this for the Iraqi people. So this moron yells out, "Kill Iraqis." And I'm thinking, as we're going through this upscale shopping district, with people driving all these fancy BMWs and Jaguars and all of that are coming by, and you look in the windows and all these extraordinarily expensive clothing and what have you. As we're talking, this incredible destruction and slaughter in our name is going on in a city called Fallujah. And it's being carried out at the orders of Bushko. Now, I'm going to be pretty critical, but I got to tell you that the orders are coming from Washington. And whatever is done, I mean, there's some pretty awful sentiments that have come out of individual soldiers that have been reported in the press. Their hatred for the people of Iraq that they're supposedly supposed to go over there to save. But you got to remember, anybody who's been in a war, and I haven't, but I've read certainly enough and talked to enough of you and talked to friends of mine that have been in wars, when it comes right down to it, you're trying to keep your butt and your buddy's butt alive. And the person over there, no matter whether the war has any good justification or not, is all about staying alive. And you don't like the people on the other side very much at all because they're trying to do great damage to you. However, this battle for Fallujah, where the most advanced army, the most powerful army in world history, pitted against irregulars armed with Kalashnikovs. Am I saying that right? Kalashnikovs, whatever. AK-47s. That's a lot easier. AK-47s, some of who are quoted as saying they prefer to fight barefoot. They're not covered with Kevlar armor. They're not backed with tanks and helicopters that are just literally destroying this modern city of hundreds of thousands of people. There's one here. Let me see if I can find. I don't know where that one has gone to. But this was so reminiscent of here. Breaking a city in order to fix it. Breaking a city in order to fix it. That's Edward Wong's headline in the New York Times, Sunday, November 14th, today. Remember from the Vietnam era, they had to destroy the city to save it because the enemy of the United States troops had great strength in a particular provincial capital in Vietnam or in the old imperial city of Hue, and now in Fallujah and Ramallah and Samarra and other towns like that. And once again, though, the troops are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away from our homes. I've been using this image a lot recently. You have young men and women from Texas and California and Indiana and Florida and Michigan and New York and New Jersey breaking cities in order to fix it. Fallujah is destroyed. Thousands of people are dead. More than 70 U.S. soldiers from Iraq were flown Saturday to a military hospital in Germany. most of them wounded in the battle for Fallujah. 73 new patients at the U.S. military's Landstuhl Regional Medical Center pushed the number of arrivals this week to 412, all injured in Fallujah. 38 deaths. It comes out to an even 450, doesn't it? 450 casualties on our side. Our young men and women, though, inflicting probably 10 times that on both people fighting against the U.S. troops. We have no idea who they are. They're rebels, they're insurgents, they're whatever name we want to put upon them. But most of all, overwhelmingly, they're Iraqis. They either have a different vision of what they want their country to be, maybe one that I don't think much of even. It's based on religion. I don't think anything of it at all. But what, by what right does the United States take it upon itself to destroy this city, to kill all these people? I mean, imagine if this was Detroit, and we were being attacked by Chinese troops, dropping 500-pound bombs, coming in with tanks and blowing whole neighborhoods apart. There was this awful photograph that I saw, this obvious middle-class home, and here were these two Marines laying on this bed sleeping. And these guys probably hadn't slept in 24 hours, and what the hell? This is going to somebody's house. Imagine if it was yours. These were Chinese troops doing it to us. Well, because they were trying to break our city in order to fix it. This war is absolutely illegal. Bush and his pals are war criminals. And if you don't believe any of that, all right, okay. That's just, anybody, the only people going to believe that are left of center, including me. By the way, if you want to get in on this, 313-298-WRIF. Let me ask you warmongers, this war has taken the place of the NHL games that are not the hockey league that it isn't for those of you listening far away. There's a hockey lockout, so there's no hockey. So this is just great. He can just root on our troops. In the meantime, 450 casualties, 38 men, including the young man from Monroe County, just south of here. So I want to ask you this, and you can call 313-298-WRIF, or feel free to email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. How many men and women are you willing to lose in this battle for what? What is it for? Remind me about that. Is it freeing the Iraqi people? Now, the Secretary of War, Donald Rumsfeld, the man who said this could be done with about 140,000 troops, who in many ways is responsible for all of this, ultimately, of course, it's Bush's fault. He said this is going to have to be done in 14 or 15 other cities. 14 or 15 more Fallujahs. Well, the Marine Commandant's very happy. It only took about 6 days. Well, do the math. 15 times 6. Do the math. 450 casualties times 15. Do the math. 38 times 15. This is what you want? And this is being done for what? I'll tell you why it's being done now. I mean, initially, of course, it was to control oil resources in the Middle East, and still is. That's taken a back burner. Just like Vietnam, where Richard Nixon said, I won't be the first American president to lose a war, and then did. Bush and his gangster regime are fearful that there's going to be an Iraq syndrome, just like there was a Vietnam syndrome. But tell me, for oil or for national honor, how many men and women of the United States are you willing to sacrifice? There's not 10 of you of the maybe 1,000 that are listening, the 10% of you or so, what would that be, 1%, that would actually be willing to go over there. It's just root for the home team. Red Wings aren't playing, but we've got our Marines kicking butt in Fallujah. Isn't that great? Bush, in the meantime, paints a rosy picture of the Iraq situation. I wonder if he danced a jig after learning that Fallujah had been about 90 to 95% taken over. Breaking a city in order to to fix it. Hard lessons in battle. 150 Marines meet one sniper. This is in the November 10th New York Times as well. New York, American Marines calling in airstrikes on a pair of dingy three-story buildings squatting along Highway 10 on Wednesday, dropping 500-pound bombs each time. This is a civilian city. But here's one of the things I want you to look for. There's a sniper that's shooting at these 150 Marines. It was a lesson on the nature of the enemy in this hellish warren of rubble-strewn streets. That's what it had been reduced to. A hellish warren of rubble-strewn streets. Also, by the way, in this Edward Wong article, he says, Marines in the dusty warrens of Fallujah. Warrens. That's an odd thing to call somebody's homes. Because I looked it up, Merriam-Webster online. Chiefly British, a place legally authorized for keeping small game. Two, an area as of uncultivated ground where rabbits breed, a structure where rabbits are kept or bred, the rabbits of a warren. Then the third one, the least used, a crowded tenement or district, a maze of passageway or cubbies. But anyways, the sniper is picking pot shots at the Marines. And Dexter Filkins, the Times reporter, says at least a few of the people, let me see, not all of the insurgents are holy warriors looking for martyrdom. At least a few are highly trained killers who do their job with cold precision and know how to survive. These are awful men. Cold precision, highly trained killers. Then here's more. Despite the world-shaking blast of weaponry as the Americans try to root out the snipers, this is also a contest of wills in which the tension rises to a level that seems unbearable. Marine snipers sit as motionless as blue herons for 30 minutes and stare with crazed intensity into the oversized scopes on their guns. If so much of a shadow brushes across a windowsill, they open up. Well, are these highly trained killers who do their job with cold precision? On one occasion, the snipers tensed when they heard movement in the direction of a smoldering building. A cat sauntered out, unconcerned with anything but making its rounds in the neighborhood. A sniper asked an officer, "Can I shoot it, sir?" "Absolutely not," came the reply. Oh, a city in ruins, sky thick with smoke. Let's kick ass the American way. This is from the London Observer. This is Major General Richard Natonsky preparing his troop for the battle. "We're going in to raise the Iraqi flag above Fallujah," he says, "to give it back to the Fallujans." Who does he think is there? Pausing to remember the Marine Corps who fought in Vietnam, Korea, and two world wars, they then stood to attention and launched into the Marine hymn. One Marine said, "Only two songs sent a shiver up my spine." His face scarred with pockmarks and confidence of youth. The Marine hymn in that song by Toby Keith after 9/11, which says, "We're going to kick you up the ass." That's the American way, even if we are 6,000 miles from home. Well, pretty dismal stuff. The United States should immediately withdraw from Iraq. Couldn't be worse than this. People say, well, it'll be a civil war and all that. But what will happen? Will thousands of people be killed? Will cities be razed? At least, if that happens, it won't be at our hands. When are our cities going to be bombed? Is there going to be no retaliation? I just hope that they have the police apparatus to the extent where they can forestall what hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of Muslims must be dreaming of. Retribution. Revenge. And what are we going to say when it happens to us? When they blow out a city with some nuke that Bush's slipshod security process when they went into Iraq allowed. You know what they're going to say? You did that to our cities, and we're doing that to yours. And what are we going to say? How are we going to protest like 9/11 after what we're doing to them? Tell me. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. And where are we going first? We're going to line two. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hey, are you with me? Wait a minute. Am I doing everything right? I am. Are you there? Maybe not. All right. Got another one for me. Line three. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. If that's two in a row, am I doing something wrong? I don't know. Hold on. Hold on here. Let me see. No, they've just hung up. All right. Line 5. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah, you were talking about the blue and red when, you know, what people thought when they seen it.
Yeah.
When I seen all that red, honestly, I thought of Confederacy.
Well, have you seen the slave map?
No, I did not.
Well, that's very interesting, Mike, because when you look at the slave states and in 1850, the slave states and the territories that were open to slavery, it's also the red state map.
Wow.
So you were right on it.
Yeah. You know, we don't allow God in schools. We should not allow morals and God to play in our politics.
Well, particularly when it's being done by hypocrites.
Right.
That's the worst. And that's why when people start talking about all this morality, and it's just so much posturing and opportunism and hypocrisy, if people would stick to issues that really affect our country, our security, our education, our... I don't know. I mean, I don't know how old you are, whether you plan to go to college or not, but it's getting, like, for instance, just college, getting priced out of people's budget unless you're in the upper class.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you see the bumper sticker, Sportsman for Bush?
I did.
So you're basing your vote on sports? I mean, what about the economy? What about the U.S.? What about the war? What about the soldiers dying? But as long as you can go play, you know, be sportsmen, you're going to vote for Bush. That's just ridiculous.
It is. It's dumb effistan, which we can't say the F word. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it is pretty dumb. All right, Mike, thank you very much for joining us. 313-298-WRIF. Back to line 2. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hey. Yeah.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey.
Hi.
Hey, what's up? How's it going?
Going good.
How are you doing?
We went through that. Tell me.
From Canada, actually.
Well, welcome. Thanks for making our broadcast international.
Hey, man. You're the man. That's all I got to say. And listen, you know, I was wondering, you can't find 10 people in Canada that would vote for Bush. How did almost 51% of you guys voted for Bush?
I don't know.
What the hell happened there? There's some mix-up.
Well, in a lot of the foreign papers, on the front cover of the London Daily Mirror, it says, how can 60 million people be so dumb?
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just don't understand it. I mean, like, you get monkeys in the ballots, you know, maybe they'll vote better. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I don't know if you've seen those maps that show the blue states, the ones that voted for Kerry joining with Canada.
It seems like only people with boats vote for Kerry. It's all over on the coastal lines, right by the waters.
Well, it's the metropolitan areas.
You know what? I think they're ready to leave America. That's what it is.
Well, that would just tickle some of these right-wingers, but I ain't going anywhere. You know, it's pretty easy for us to go to Canada. Where are you calling from? Windsor, the Windsor area?
Yeah, Windsor.
Yeah, I mean, I have friends that live in Windsor. They're saying, Pete, come on over here. You can sell your house. Get a great house over on the east side. And
yeah, well, hey, you know, come on over.
I know. It's only be 10 miles from where I live now.
We could use another educated man like you in Canada.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Hey, no problem, man.
Bye. But sorry, right-wingers. I ain't a-going anywhere. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hey, you with me? Why are we getting all these hang-ups? No, it's not your fault. No, I know that. I don't think there's anybody there. Hi, WRIF. Nope. I've never seen this. Hi, WRIF. Whoa. I can talk endlessly. All right, we got tons of open lines. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, night call. You're on the air. What is going on? Maybe I hope that we're not doing people in here. Should I try line 2? Yeah, why not? Hi, WRIF. Hi. I heard a voice. Are you with me? Interesting. Hi, WRIF. Okay. Let's go on with some other stuff. You know what we can do right now? We'll figure out what's going on. Just we'll take a break and be right back. So try calling again and don't hang up. Wait for me.
You're listening to WRIF.com. Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist, whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Are you tired of hearing mortgage companies advertising absurdly low rates? Or how about all those programs that are exclusive only to them? Well, the truth is, all these companies work with the same rates and the same programs. They are not exclusive to any one mortgage lender. It's nerve-wracking enough trying to buy a new home or figuring out how you're going to get all your debt paid off. The last thing you need is more stress from a mortgage company throwing unrealistic programs and rates at you. If you're looking for someone who will give you honest answers about your individual situation, whether it's buying a new home, refinancing, or consolidating your debt, then you absolutely need to call Mike Jenkins at First Horizon Home Loans at 877-505-8600, extension 222. You'll receive a free mortgage analysis, and you'll be able to decide for yourself which program is best for you. So call Mike Jenkins with First Horizon Home Loans today and find out how you can get home with less stress. That's 877-505-8600, extension 222. Loan subject to approval. First Horizon Home Loans is an equal housing lender. This is WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with Brenda Warner, whose husband Kurt is having a great season thus far with the Giants.
I told the Giants when they got Kurt that they were really signing both of us. Kind of like when Bill and Hillary were co-presidents. We're like co-quarterbacks. And it works.
So how'd you get Kurt to find himself?
You know, I yelled at him until I was blue in the face, but I didn't really have a breakthrough until I sat him down and broke down film, went over coverages.
Well, okay, who do you play this weekend?
We're at Lambeau, and just to give you an idea about how well we're playing right now,
Yeah. We
just happen to have the highest over number in the league this week. Bet the house on the over. And just between you, me, and the pit boss, take the Giants and the points. I think we're a strong road team on grass.
Thanks for the tip, Brenda. Those overs make me nervous, so I got to tell you.
Oh, honey, dip it then. I dip that puppy all day. If you're over down to 38, you'll be doing victory shots at Crown Royal sometime late in the third quarter, and then you can switch to Shivas down the home stretch.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast on the Riff. 101-101. Riff.
American people have a right to know.
When you need it loud. When you need it hard. You need the Riff's Midnight Metal. Tuesday through Thursday nights on the Riff. Join Screamin' Scott Randall for the loudest hour on your radio.
That's what this is all about.
Midnight Metal. Midnight Metal on the Riff. Call in your heavier-than-hell requests at 313-298-WRIF. You can also fax in or email for requests and your chance to win killer Riff swag. Send your faxes to 248-398-6219 or email screamin' at WRIF.com. Get your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screamin' Scott. From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff. You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We took calls on embarrassing things your kids said.
Yeah, I took my 6-year-old son in to get a haircut, so I'm sitting 2 chairs down from him. And the lady that's getting cutting his hair has got kind of a bad complexion. Her hair's all frizzed up, et cetera. And I'm getting my hair cut, and I hear him say, "You look like a monster."
I was about 16. I was living with my aunt, and she had 2 kids. They were my niece and nephew or cousin or something. but they're about 4 years old, and she was friends with these two girls named Michelle, and one of them was fat and one of them was skinny, so I used to decipher them by, you know, saying fat Michelle or skinny Michelle. Well, one day, one of the Michelles came to the door. Needless to say, it was a big one, and kids with the memories they have.
Yeah.
Answers the door. My fat Michelle's here!
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast on the Riff. 101.1 WRIF. Riff. Now is the Riff's Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock. 1 solid hour of your Riff rock and roll request.
Increasingly, even all around the world. But it is specifically a public affairs program. Normally, what you'd be treated to in this time slot would be somebody talking, interviewing somebody, a representative from the Histoplasmosis Foundation. Some avian, some bird disease that humans can get and say asymptomatic. But you know what I mean. That's usually what you'll get. Or it just could have been the luck of the draw. There could have been some squirrely right winger on there. Instead, you got me. All right? So... And here's what I'm getting at. I get an email every so often, and it seems to have particularly occurred since the election, where all these angry guys, what are these guys angry about? Yeah, they either won or stole the election, whichever, however you want to cut it, and so they're sore winners. Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. But they keep saying, you know, you're boring, you're talking about the same damn thing. It doesn't really matter. I mean, I'm sorry if you find it boring. I don't know what to say. There's this war going on. People are getting slaughtered. And what would you like to talk about? Talk about the Lions losing, the Pistons losing, Michigan State winning, U of M winning. But that's not what this is set up for. It's specifically set up to discuss issues. The issues that concern our country, our city, our community, our state, whatever. And the lines are always here. I mean, I'm willing to go off in any kind of tangent. So I guess I'm not, you know, according to these guys that still seem to be listening, because they leap on every word they think that I make that is contradictory or wrong or whatever. But they certainly can bring up any subject they want. But we're not supposed to talk about a war. We're not supposed to talk about the fact that there, in the last 6 days, 38 Americans and 400 and something Americans have been casualties of a war that never had to occur. So what I wish they would write in or call in, they never call in, what else would you like to talk about? That's the big question. I always say that. Here's what I want to talk about. Phone lines are open, 313-298-WRIF. I will raise one question because I have a little packet called Miscellaneous Questions. And one of the things that I did say was one of the, oh, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000 reasons I wanted to see Bush defeated was that we wouldn't have to talk about him anymore, that he would be gone. Maybe he'll still be impeached. All right. Listen to this. Unrivaled security plan for inauguration. An unprecedented level of security will frame President Bush's second inauguration, with officials planning to use thousands of police from across the country, new screening technology for inaugural guests, and a military contingent that could include a combat brigade of up to 4,000 troops. This is going to be magnified because of the September 11th attacks. Organizers are planning a traditional inauguration capped by a parade down Pennsylvania Avenue and the usual evening balls. As tens of thousands of people come to Washington to watch the January 20th swearing in, the city will be filled with military personnel, FBI agents in full SWAT outfitting, snipers on rooftops, and scores of bomb-detecting dogs. The region's air defenses have been strengthened to prevent intruder aircraft. And sensors will be deployed throughout the area to detect biological, chemical, or radiological material. 2,000 out-of-town officers will help with security, sturdier barriers, more checkpoints, metal detectors, officials setting up a high-security ticketing and credentialing system for some event, and on and on and on and on. Any idea how much this is all going to cost? I mean, some of this is picked up by this inauguration committee that Bush will appoint. You know, his wealthy buddies that are going to benefit at our expense for him being elected. Never was reelected because he lost the first one. And a lot of people say he lost this one as well. But anyway, that's a whole other can of worms. So here's my question. Why the hell are we having this coronation? Why in a democratic, secular nation are we having something that has all the trappings of royalty? I mean, this is what these rulers want to project. Something that not is a servant of the people, an office that represents a servant of the people, responsible and responsive to the people, but an exalted ruler. This is how far we've come from the people that left Europe because they didn't like that, and the people that founded this country. Well, I say cancel the inauguration other than a simple swearing in. A simple swearing in would simply mean, George W. Bush, take the oath of office, goodbye. And then they can go have their goddamn parties wherever they want, all their rich hotels with all their rich buddies. But here is the real objection. You're subjecting the city to the possibility of being a target. And they're going to wind up spending, what, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer monies. So you and I are going to be paying for combat brigades and unprecedented levels of security, bomb-detecting dogs, FBI agents in full SWAT outfitting. Well, they're having a grand time, of course. And this elevates them all the more in the public eye. So it works out real well. And we, the dumb population, they think we're all dumb effistan, by the way. Even those of you who voted for them, they have nothing but contempt for you, ultimately. We got to pay the bill. I say cancel the whole damn thing. How about you? 313-298-WRIF. Jay, thank you. I'm sorry, you said I missed entirely. Oh, okay, line two, thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing today?
Doing good.
I got a question for you. I want to get off the subject a little bit here of the war thing. This has been kind of plagued my mind. I'm a machinist. And I see these jobs going down the tubes and going to other countries and stuff like that. And I had heard from numerous people that George Bush is trying to do away with overtime wages, like that the over 40-hour time and a half. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Well,
have you heard anything about that?
No, yeah.
Also, I wanted to ask you about just that.
Okay, well.
We go that.
Let me tell you that it probably for hourly workers, no, it's not going to affect hourly workers like yourself. But Bush, because he's completely beholden to the employer class in this country rather than the working people, had put in, I'll tell you the truth, I can't even remember where this is at. They put in a presidential executive order that would have limited overtime for lots of people and recategorized people so they wouldn't be eligible for it. But then the Congress overturned it. Even some Republicans voted against it because they knew it was screwing the middle class. So I'm not sure exactly where it's at now. But believe it, lessening our wages is high on their agenda.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, actually, what it was, I remember now about the draft. I've been hearing about this draft and if that's going to go down and what your thoughts were on that.
Well, the Republicans say that they have no intention of instituting a draft. There's no need for one. The generals don't want one. And I'll have a guy on the air in about an hour and 15 minutes that says draft is in our future. And I don't know for sure. You would think that it would be so extraordinarily unpopular and there'd be so much resistance, way beyond even what there was during the Vietnam era, that nobody would dare to put one into effect. But if there's another big attack on this country in retaliation for what we're doing in Iraq and there needs to be a lot more troops, who knows? Maybe there won't be as much opposition.
Yeah, I'm almost at the point where I can't even really trust anything anymore, it seems like, you know?
Well, that's
with the government and the whole Bush committee and the whole thing.
I got you.
All right, good.
All right,
man.
Thank you.
A lot.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry I wasn't able to give you more full answers, but that's about what I know. Appreciate it. Peter Werbe here with you. 313-298-WRIF. Call talk yes at yahoo.com. We haven't gotten a single email in here. James, listening in Kenosha, Wisconsin, wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Without a doubt, the Bush administration must be forced to end the tragedy in Iraq, much like Nixon was forced to withdraw from Vietnam. But Nixon had the facade of Vietnamization and peace with honor to cover U.S. withdrawal. However, if the neoconservative goal in Iraq is the establishment of permanent military bases to gain a strategic foothold and ensure the flow of oil, how can Bush retreat now? Where is the pressure point for the anti-war forces to create change there? I don't know. Bush can't withdraw. And look what's happened. Actually a few more of these things having to do with it. I forgot. Let me lay this on you. Islamist groups vow to spread fight across Iraq. Islamist groups, including one led by al-Qaeda ally Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, vowed in a video obtained on Saturday to take their battle in the rebel city of Fallujah to all corners of Iraq. So that's working real well, isn't it? All right. So I think the Bush administration absolutely 100% lied about weapons of mass destruction. The real original reason for going in there, couldn't wait for the UN, couldn't wait for the inspectors, we were about to be attacked. It was all a lie, and they knew it was a lie. But let's say it was a mistake, mistaken information. It came through the CIA, and the head of the CIA at the time, who has since resigned, is George J. Tenet. And now get this, he's kept a low profile since he stepped down as the country's top intelligence chief in July. In the past few months, Mr. Tenet has earned well over $500,000 in speaking fees from about 20 appearances. He's negotiating for a lucrative book contract. So here is a guy that fed all this misinformation to the White House, and he's reaping these incredible financial rewards. He says, I do not walk in and tell the president that it was wrong to do this, he said. He was in St. Joseph, Benton Harbor, Michigan. And he says, I won't say at the end of the game when things are looking bad that I was against it all along. So he says things are looking bad. Still, Mr. Tenet has stopped well short of endorsing the war. We made a decision, he says. Politically, you can decide if it was right. Either way, we need to honor the commitment we made. So thousands and thousands of Iraqis are dying, hundreds of American casualties, and he says either way, we've got to honor this commitment. All the while, he's making $500,000 so far, $35,000 a pop. And just to reward him, apparently he is also signed on for 3 years as a distinguished professor at Georgetown University, his alma mater. Isn't that sweet? Who says crime doesn't pay? All right, let's go back to our phones. Jay Hudson, thank you. Line two it is? Oh, four. All right. I can't see it too well. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hey, hi, Peter.
Hi.
Xavier from Santa Cruz.
Hey, Xavier from Santa Cruz, one of my favorite cities, although they canceled my show there, didn't they?
Yeah, I guess they did. But I want to say that 20 years ago, I was in your listening area, and I used to listen to you.
Really?
I moved out here a long time ago. But I wanted to talk about, I was a Nader voter, and then I re-registered Democratic and voted for Kucinich in the primary, and then Kerry, and I trusted him, and I really don't trust the Democratic Party, and I think that they're just the flip side of this multinational conglomeration, and the fix was in. And what I'm concerned about is there's all this money that's supposed to be available for lawyers and stuff, and I hear a lot of left-leaning talk shows seem to be ready to throw in the towel, and I'd like to call people's attention to a possibility that...
Wait, be a little clearer. You're talking about now that there is this challenge to the votes in... Money's being raised to challenge the vote at county by county in Ohio.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
I'm sorry, clarify a little bit more what you're asking me.
I'm trying to get what you're talking about. It's
okay.
Not real clear.
Well, yeah, I'm a little nervous because I don't call into talk shows a lot, and I tend to cover things too quickly, but... Basically, what I'm concerned about is before the election, there was a lot of Democratic. They said they had lawyers in every area,
oh, yeah.
Lots of money to fight things, and it feels like there's a lot of fishy things. And I hear a lot of left-leaning talk shows getting ready to say, "Well, you know, there's a lot of fishy things, but there's no legal proof." And I think we should look for legal proof. But if things happen that the Electoral College meets and votes, I don't think we should leave it lay there.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should be thinking outside the box. We should pursue legal remedies, but we need to also, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities. There's general strikes. There's, you know, I got this phrase I say, don't work, don't shop, don't spend a nickel. And if on Inauguration Day, if Bush gets in and it's very clear that he doesn't deserve to be there, maybe once a month, just general strike across the country.
Well, the American people did something other than watch television. I have no idea how many people are listening in the Detroit area. Modestly, I would say there's 100,000. There could be considerably more. I mean, there could be 250,000 people listening. There could be hundreds of thousands of more people listening on the Internet. I have no idea. And I announced this demonstration in a suburb of Detroit, a nice upscale suburb, and you know there's about 125 people there. So overwhelmingly, people that listen to this broadcast support the ideas that come out of it. One's like yours, one's like mine, and yet they don't do anything. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be grabbing people by the coattails and shaking them and demanding they do things, but if you don't take your ideas and put them into action like you're suggesting, it's going to be kind of hopeless. And if you're just waiting, as you say, for the Democratic Party to come up with someone who's not a loser, I think it's going to be a long wait.
Well, the other thing I want to do is a lot of times you go to, like, teach-ins and things, and people are always wringing their hands and saying, what can I do? You can always do something. Maybe some people can't go on strike, but there's other things you can do. It's called, like, work to rule. It's like work. You slow down your work, and there's just open your mind to little things that you can do, you know? And
well, people are going to do that at last resort. But I think I said this last week. When people in Madrid suffered that horrendous train bombing earlier this year, millions of people, and it was not clear what their politics were, because I think it was everybody, got out in the streets. Here in the United States on September 11th, everybody went home and watched television.
Yeah. Well, Peter, tell me, do you think that, like, I actually think it's a good thing that Bush got a second term, because he's basically made things really untenable. And I think that he's made his bed and he's going to have to sleep in it. And I think a lot of people are going to start waking up and seeing that their economic status is dropping. People are going to be dying. People are going to start waking up, I think.
Well, I think that is important. Xavier, thank you much for calling in. If you, a couple of my friends from Santa Cruz, California, still call in, the most famous Billy from Santa Cruz, what the hell ever happened to him? Thank you. Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Emails coming in fast and furious to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I'll try to get some of them on the air. Hi, Night Call, and you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Peter. How are you?
Good.
Listen, I was just wanting to say that, you know, I think maybe there just is really that many stupid people in this country that voted for Bush. You know, I remember before you had said on your show that, you know, people that made like under $100,000 a year really had no business voting for a Republican and their type of policies that they like to use.
Yeah.
And I myself, personally, I voted a straight Libertarian ticket. That's the first time that I've ever done that. I typically voted Democratic in the past, but I'm just so tired of the situation. I don't really think that the Democrats have the answer to, you know, how badly that Bush has really screwed up this country.
No, I don't think so either, and I think that's one of the problems. Very few people voted for Kerry with any enthusiasm. I voted for a Democrat for the first time in my entire life, and it was done only to express my revulsion, my horror, I can't even begin to find enough words to describe my feelings of loathing for what the Bush mob has done to this country. And Xavier, before you from Santa Cruz, said in some ways it could be good if Bush, that was good that Bush is now going to get a second term. And, I mean, things are going to hell. And they're going to get worse. And why 60 million people voted for him is way beyond me. But I think the results of it are going to come home. unfortunately, to all of us. Not going to just happen to the blue states. Not going to just, it's not just going to happen to the red states. It's not going to just happen to the people that voted for him. It's going to happen to all of us.
But I don't think those people will realize that because Bush was reelected, or actually just elected this time, that their life is worse because of that. I don't think they can see the big picture. You know,
I was
really disappointed to read in the newspaper the other day about how after the first of the year, if you donate a car to charity, you know, you can no longer get the blue book value of your car to write off on your taxes. And that money was taken away from the average taxpayer to fund some kind of thing for them to outsource jobs.
Well, I don't know. You know, this country is running on a deficit, thanks to Bush. A little later, maybe I'll even talk about what's happening with the U.S. with the dollar. I mean, this is not exciting talk show stuff. What does it mean as the dollar declines? Well, it only means that all of us are going to wind up making less and having to spend more. All right, thank you very much. I've got to take a break. Appreciate it. By the way, if, like you think the U.S. should get out of Fallujah, bring our troops home immediately. There's a couple of emergency demonstrations. There's one tomorrow, Monday, November 15th, and it is 4 to 5:30 at the Federal Building in downtown Detroit on Lafayette at... this is the Federal Courthouse. Sorry. Ooh. Yeah, I got a mistake here. It's at the Federal Courthouse on Lafayette between Washington and Shelby, not at the Federal Building. 4 to 5:30, the Federal Courthouse, 231 West Lafayette between Washington and Shelby. And then another, Friday, November 19th, 4 to 6, Randolph and Jefferson at the entrance to the tunnel. So if you want to do something, there is one thing you can do. If you don't like demonstrations, call up and tell me what you are going to do.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more of your calls right after this.
Psst. Hey, late night listeners. David Hall reporting for Rock Financial. Rock Financial's giving away $100,000. That's right. It's Rock Financial's Dash for the Cash. Yep, I said it. We're giving away $100,000. And while others are sleeping, you can enter to win right now at rockfinancial.com during any Lions game this season. When the Detroit Lions return the opening kickoff for a touchdown, one lucky fan is going to win up to $100,000 to pay off their mortgage. But you got to register to win. You got to go to rockfinancial.com. That's rockfinancial.com. It's the Dash for the Cash exclusively from the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. And while you're at rockfinancial.com, check out our mortgage calculators. See how much home you can afford? Maybe if it makes sense to refinance. Go right now, rockfinancial.com. It's the Dash for the Cash. You could win $100,000 from the mortgage experts. rockfinancial.com.
Visit rockfinancial.com for official rules. Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company and equal housing lender.
The improved on-road handling of the all-new 05 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo is such an impressive feature that we could dedicate an entire commercial to it. But then that would leave out a long list of great features that also make the new Grand Cherokee the ultimate 4x4. Features like a powerful V6 engine, 17-inch aluminum wheels, air, keyless entry, and more. The new Grand Cherokee also offers the Quadra-Track 1 four-wheel drive system, so you can race along the pavement or kick up dust along a backwoods trail. And right now, qualified Daimler Chrysler employee lessees can lease a Grand Cherokee Laredo for just $249 a month for 39 months with $1,979 due at signing. Tax, title, and license extra. The all-new Jeep Grand Cherokee. The off-road legend continues on road. See your Chrysler and Jeep superstores today for America's hottest 4x4s. Call 1-888-299-JEEP for lease sample details. Residency restrictions apply. Offer requires dealer contribution. Must take delivery by 11:30:04. Jeep is a registered trademark of Daimler Chrysler.
More Night Call with Peter Werby. Next on The Rim.
Are you one of the millions of men embarrassed by premature performance in bed? I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's performance specialist. Premature E is the most common of all sexual issues for men, but now you can prolong your performance and your pleasure with the free 30-day trial of Maxtrol, the new climax control system for men. Maxtrol gives you greater control during intimacy, so you can delay the urge and last longer, which means more pleasure for you and for her. Maxtrol is the confidential, non-prescription way to get the confidence and endurance you want and she needs in bed. I'm so sure of it, I'll send it to you free for 30 days.
Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. You pay only shipping and handling. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
So you're a slot machine.
Oh, I prefer arbitrary investment return specialist.
Uh-huh. It probably surprises people to know that you talk.
And people listen.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I can be very persuasive. It's in my nature. By the way, do you think you could find it in your heart to spare a dollar?
Yeah, sure. I think I've got one.
See? Huh? Gotcha.
Boy, you were good.
It's a gift. But look, bottom line, gambling should be fun. People need to remember to...
gamble responsibly?
Exactly. As my Uncle Edgar used to say, put some balance in your life.
That's thoughtful advice.
That'll be $5.
Here you go.
I got you again.
A reminder that if you gamble, please gamble responsibly.
Pardon me.
To learn about the warning signs of problem gambling, you can call 1-800-270-7117. A reminder from the Michigan Department of Community Health and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters. Say, you still need that dollar?
No, it's just too easy.
That's 1-800-270-7117.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. It's midnight in Detroit, and some of you are, of course, in different time zones. Earlier, it's later. Some people, it's 6 in the morning. Other people, it's, oh, I don't know, 9 at night. I got an incredible number of emails at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. This is John in Inkster. He says, you know what dawned on me a couple of days ago? The campaign was a farce. Kerry was supposed to lose. They both are skull and bones. This is the secret society from Yale. They both were members of. Could be an explanation of why he surrendered and ran. It was a hoax. Please tell me I'm nuts. I don't know if I'm going to do that, John. You're, like I say, you're the second... emailer that you know that that has run this by me. I was talking earlier about this slaughter in Fallujah, and it's whatever, right? 38 deaths, 415 wounded on the United States side. Probably thousands of Iraqis, including lots of civilians. I'm sure it'll come out. Some people are already sending me these ghastly photos of civilian casualties, which you needn't do. I know that it's bad. Send those to your Republican friends, your warmongering friends. And I ask the question, though, if you support this war, which is for what? For what? For what? I can't remember now. Now it's a war for war. It's just so Bush doesn't lose this war. And I asked, if you support this war, how many casualties on the United States side are you willing to suffer? I know you're willing to suffer endless Iraqi casualties, the civilians, their army, the other side. Anyways, Eric in Ann Arbor writes in, while you were asking people what they are willing to see in terms of casualty numbers, you need to ask them if they would be willing to go themselves if they have not already. Good luck, Eric. They're not going to do that. Coming up in 1 hour, 1 a.m. Eastern time, we're going to be playing an interview with Dave Lindorf, a freelance journalist, and he's a columnist with counterpunch.org. Great site, counterpunch.org. You can go through my site as well. And then at 1:30, the great ecologist David Suzuki. Amazing man, David Suzuki, davidsuzuki.org, S-U-Z-U-K-I. All right, back to our phones. Let's see. Hi, thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
How's it going?
It's going good.
I just want to say I agree with your show 100%. This is the first time I've listened to it, and I think it's great.
Well, thank you.
And I've never felt so passionately about politics in my life. Matter of fact, this is the first time I voted, and I'm 28. But I just want to say to the people that are listening that did vote for Bush, I know one of the things that swayed a lot of people was that they felt that he was against abortion. And I just want to say to those people, how many babies do you think have died in Iraq? How many babies do you think are fatherless or motherless because of this stupid, senseless war? You know, I just feel like... you know, no one seems to even be thinking about that. The people that are already here, you know, why focus on the babies that aren't born let's talk about the ones that were already here.
Sure, I think that's a good idea. And I'll tell you, on my website, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com, there's this... I don't know, creative, but very, very disturbing poster that someone sent me. And it says, save the unborn children, or save the unborn babies, kill the children. And there's a sign of someone saying, stop abortion. And on the other hand, there's an Iraqi father holding a bleeding child. So, yeah, I mean, these people are the biggest hypocrites on the planet, the absolute biggest hypocrites on the planet.
It just baffles me how, you know, 61 million people, like you said, could vote for this guy again and give him another 4 years after, I mean, his own track record is just terrible. We've lost more jobs. We're in a deficit. We don't have a surplus in money anymore. I mean, the country's just going down the tubes, and yet the only answer I can ever get from a Bush supporter is, well, I feel safe. I mean, that's just not a reason to give this madman another 4 years, in my opinion.
I got it. Thank you, my friend. Thanks for listening for the first time, and thanks for calling.
No problem.
All right, bye now. Well, yeah, I said we were going to talk about dumb Effistan. If you go to my website that I just mentioned, there's a map that just has set these nasty little fascists off in the worst regard. And they say, all right, yeah, we're dumb because we voted for Bush. It's worse than that. It's worse than that. I got you may have... seen this material that's going around the internet showing that the that by IQ the states that voted for Bush had by on average much lower IQ. That's true. I hate to say it. Actually, you know what? I don't hate to say it at all. I forgot what. Actually, I don't have the IQs, but the first 16 or 18 states are all blue states, and then there's like one or two Bush states. Then there's Michigan, although we went for Kerry, and then but the bottom 25 states, as the IQ drops precipitously down at the end, of course, which is Mississippi. The old Phil Oakes song from the 1960s, Mississippi, find another country to be part of. Voting 85% against allowing people that love one another, regardless of their gender, to marry. That was their vote, 85 to 15%. Anyways, turns out they're unhealthy as well. Only two Kerry states are below. Kerry carried 8 of the 10 healthiest states. Bush carried the 16 sickest. You ready for that? I mean, what the hell is going on? I mean, there's some correlation. And so they're dumb, they're sick. What else? 80% of the sickest 25 states were carried by Bush. And thanks to Roy listening in Placidas, New Mexico, for that. And what about the moral issues? Maybe they're sicker, maybe they're dumber, but they're more moral. They have this grand commitment to marriage. And you can see because they vote... to deny, for instance, the right of people whose sexuality they don't agree with to get married. Well, it turns out if the blue states care less about moral values, that's it, right? We don't care about moral values. They do. Then the question asked by the New York Times today is, why are divorce rates so low in the bluest of the blue states, Massachusetts? Researchers have noted that the areas of the country where divorce rates are highest are also frequently the areas where most Christians live, conservative Christians live. The areas of the country where divorce rates are highest are also frequently the areas where conservative Christians live. Kentucky, Mississippi, again, and Arkansas, for example, voted overwhelmingly for constitutional amendments to ban gay marriage, but they had three of the highest divorce rates in 2003. They are just such a pack of hypocrites, aren't they? Their hypocrisy, their self-righteousness, knows no boundaries. The lowest divorce rates are largely in the blue states, the Northeast, the upper Midwest, and the state with the lowest divorce rate was Massachusetts, home to John Kerry, the Kennedys, and same-sex marriage. The deal is, of course, they want to force all their crap on us. And they don't live up to any of it themselves. But they want to force it all on us by law. Whereas we don't care what they do. They don't want to marry people of the same sex. Don't let them. If they don't like, if they like the Gatlin brothers and instead of Perfect Circle and Tool. But, yeah, that's cool. You know, who cares? Who cares what they listen to or who they make love to or how perverted they are or they aren't or whether they get divorced? I mean, if they get divorced, I feel bad for them. But they're always trying to shove something down our throat because they're a pack of authoritarians. Oh, here, yeah. Sorry, here's IQ in politics. The top 16 states were all IQ 100 to 113 average, all went for Kerry. Then Virginia for Bush, Wisconsin for Kerry, Colorado and Iowa for Bush, Michigan, finally, it's in at 21. But then when you hit 25 through 50, bam, bam, bam. It's down to Mississippi. The average IQ is 85. And that really goes for the Mark Twain quote. Remember? Consider the intelligence of the average man and realize that 50% are even dumber. You can turn it around and say, consider the average intelligence of the person in Mississippi. That's terrible. That's terrible. That's just snobbery. But here, more proof that Republicans are dumb. They just are dumb. And people that voted for Bush, I'm sorry if I'm insulting you, but here's proof. I'm not just saying, nah, you're dumb because you didn't agree with me. Well, there's one statistic, you know, lower average IQ. But let's see, a recent study by, and thanks to Dave from the UAW, by the way, that showed up at the Women in Black demonstration yesterday. A recent study by the University of Maryland's Program on International Policy Attitudes demonstrates, even after the final report of the Bush administration, demonstrating the complete absence of any weapons of mass destruction program in Iraq, 72% of Bush supporters operate in ignorance and believe Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, 47%, or major development programs, 25%. Totaling to 72%. So three-quarters of Bush voters are out on planet Bush, out past Uranus. Nobody believes that, except these meatheads. No less disturbing, 75% of Bush supporters believe Iraq provides significant support for al-Qaeda, and 63% believe the U.S. had the evidence. Again, absolutely wrong. You say, well, wait a minute, he did. Hey, even Bush said no to that one. Only 31% of Bush supporters know the majority of the world opposes the Iraq war. Two-thirds of them think that that they don't. 42% think the world is divided. Not true. 25% think the rest of the world approves. Man. Yeah, you know, where I live, by the way. And sort of the big cross street is like 696 in Woodward. Ferndale, Bush 30%, Kerry 67%. Huntington Woods, Bush 28%, Kerry 70%. Oak Park, Bush 20%, Kerry almost 80%. Royal Oak Township, Bush 4%, Kerry 95%. We got to find out who those 4% are. Southfield, Bush 17%, Kerry 81%. Pleasant Ridge, which is the most upscale of all the cities, Bush 36%, Kerry 62%. Royal Oak, Bush 44%, Kerry 54%. Oakland County, just by a whisker, about 3,000 votes went for Kerry. And, you know, a number of these sore winners, these people that email me, you know, saying it's up because of people like me. They say, because of people like you, that's why Bush won. You know, this is my broadcast area. I hope at least I pulled some votes Kerry's way. But if you notice how some of these Bush supporters sneeringly say that the only reason Michigan went for Kerry was the Detroit vote. Man, if that ain't racist, I don't know what is. What these racist creeps are saying is that somehow living in a city or being an African-American discounts the validity of a desire to kick a lying war criminal out of office. That's essentially what they're saying. They could say the same thing. Hey, if it wasn't for these rural people in these little cities, the whole country would be for Kerry, right? I mean, why you ever get this? I mean, this shows you this arrogance and this mean-spiritedness and this racism and what have you. That they say, well, if it wasn't for, you know, Chicago and L.A. and what have you. So what? We live here. And how are people in Detroit saying that? I don't get it. I don't get these people at all. Anyway, let's continue onward. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing today?
Doing good.
Hey, this is my first time actually listening to your show, and I'm actually pretty impressed. I have a tendency of flipping back and forth to different talk shows and hearing people like, what's his name, Bill O'Reilly. And, you know, it's kind of, you're right. These people are really messed up, and you can hear the underlying racism in their voices.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, you can, and it's like, you know, I won't say I'm 100% behind you because, you know, I don't think 100% like, you know, we're all our own individuals. But my actual, I had a couple of comments that I wanted to say. How they're reporting like only 38 casualties in Fallujah, right?
Right, American deaths, yeah.
Right, American.
Not casualties, there's 450 casualties. Yeah, right, but 38 deaths.
Correct. Now, all of the media now is being suppressed through military censorship. And supposedly, America is in there, quote-unquote, liberating the Iraqi people so they can have freedom of speech. Yet, when TV stations like Al Jazeera just set up a camera and say, okay, we don't care what the camera shows, who gets killed, who gets blown away, whether it's Muslim, Christian, Arab, or American, we're just going to show it on TV, they try to ban it.
Yeah.
In the name of, well, it's detrimental to the troops. So my actual question is, do you think that the overall death toll is only in the 1,000 range? Like, what is it, 1,100 now?
You mean of Iraqis?
No, sir.
I mean of U.S., yeah.
Right, because they tried to stop, you know, that big issue when the lady took a picture of the plane?
Yeah.
And had all the caskets coming off, and it seems like there's so much military censorship of the information that we're getting. I mean, has anybody actually stopped and questioned, you know, you lied about everything else to us, you know? I'm too young to even remember Vietnam. You know, my father was in that era, but, and I have no idea how old you are, but historically, when the Vietnam War started, was the same kind of report coming through, okay, well, there's not that many deaths coming, and then after a while, it just started mounting up so much
that
they had to tell the truth?
Well, I think the importance of your question is that that you and millions of other people have no confidence in the government. Think about this guy, the letter I wrote, who said that he thinks even the election was thrown purposely by the Kerry forces. There is such an erosion of confidence in the whole process.
Talking about the skull and bones, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, well, I mean, skull and bones, is, I mean, that's part of the Illuminati.
Okay.
If you actually study whether a person is, or this is a whole nother thing, because I don't really get involved in the voting process, because the both sides, they have their good point, they have their bad point. And it's like, if you vote for this side, most people vote out of personal interest. It's not off of a national interest. It's, I vote, like you said, the people, sportsmen for Bush. Well, this person is voting based off of a personal need, not the needs of the masses of the people. Most people vote based off of what can you do for me.
But do you think that people this time, these 60 million people, voted their own interest? I mean, when we're through with our call, I'm going to read an email and then answer it in terms of people not even voting their best interest. They voted. I was reading an account of somebody who said that they, or did someone tell me this on this show, that this guy was watching television and Bush was praying with some kid, so he says that made him vote for Bush. What the hell does that have to do with jobs or war or security or schools or anything like that?
Yeah, I think there's a real underline of what, I mean, a lot of people, they say, you know, Bush is going in there for the oil, or Bush is going in there because his daddy didn't finish the job and it's a pride thing for the family. But if you look at, did you catch by any chance that interview that I think it was one of the newscasters did with Tony Blair?
No, I didn't see it.
Okay. All of them say the same thing as far as going on with these, what you want to say, quote-unquote, Muslim countries. Their main thing is we do not want Islamic law in these countries, even if the people vote for it. Like
yeah.
If the Iraqi people were to say, we want Islamic law, we want to run by the Quran, and that's it, the people would not sign off for that. Even Tony Blair said, we will not sign off on an Islamic state.
Well, you have to realize, one of the groups, for instance, of these Islamic groups that said that they were going to create the uprising all across Iraq was called, let me see if I can get to this quickly, something like the 1920 Revolutionary Brigade or something like that. And the intervention and exploitation of that region of the country by Western powers, and in that era by Britain, is really what has set the stage for all of this. And none of this has just come out of nowhere, like saying, why are these people so crazy? You know, well, they've been made pretty crazy by what's been done to them over generations. Yeah, here, the 1920 Revolutionary Brigades. Winston Churchill ordered poison gas used on Iraqi rebels back then who were daring to protest against Western rule. So it's an ugly past, and the West should get out of the Middle East entirely, is my view. All right, I got to go. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening for the first time. Thanks for calling in, 313-298-WRIF. Matt writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Voted for Bush in the election and have been a Republican for many years. I've been listening to your radio program for the last 6 months, and I just wanted to ask question after talking to many people in construction, wholesalers, and being in business for many years, it seems as if the economy is getting worse rather than better. What do you think it will take to turn this around? Well, Matt, it might have taken Bush being thrown out of office. Well, read the New York Times business section, because they're the smart end of finance capital. They're not the big pharmaceuticals or big construction or anything like that that want to make a quick profit in the next 3 to 6 months. This is, in fact, this was a big lead editorial in the Times, two days ago. For all its professed desire for the strong dollar, the Bush administration has apparently decided that letting the dollar slide is a good way to shrink America's trade deficit. Under Bush, we've had record trade deficits. And all of this stuff is pretty confusing to the average person. It is to me. But having a trade deficit ain't good. It means paying out more than you're importing more than you're exporting. This is dubious economic policy. It provides a modicum of relief to American exporters, but increases the nation's vulnerability to higher prices and higher interest rates. So here's what Bush Co. has done. Bush Incorporated. They're going to let the strength of the dollar slide to the point where the Secretary of the Treasury, Snow, doesn't even use the language any longer, strong dollar. They're going to allow the dollar to weaken against other currencies. And so what's going to happen is we're going to wind up paying higher prices, there'll be higher interest rates, and, of course, they ignore other fiscal measures that would assure a comeback from this. The dollar, which has declined nearly 30% against the euro since Bush took office in 2001, fell to a record low this week. The decline has not been, well, there's a whole long other thing like that. The only lasting remedy is to reduce the federal budget deficit. That's why we're having a bad time. That's why we're having a bad time. Trading partners like Europe and Japan can expand their economies, increasing their demand for American goods, or America can allow its dollar to fall to increase its exports. That's what it's trying to do. The only lasting remedy is to reduce the federal budget deficit. And if you're thinking, what the hell is he talking about? This is so boring. This is affecting every dollar you earn and every dollar you spend. And the economy is going to be fixed in a manner to the benefit of the ultra wealthy and the corporations in this country, and to the will harm the middle class, the disadvantage of the middle class and the working class. Now, that in turn calls for specific policies already. You know, the Bushko has run us into a deficit. He got a surplus. He's now run us into this huge deficit. During the Bush years, 92% of the nearly $1 trillion increase in publicly held debt has been financed by foreign lenders. In other words, you have almost $1 trillion of debt owed to foreign banks and lenders. And it means when we pay our taxes, we have to pay debt service on that. So when you look at your paycheck and a third of it's gone, it's not even going to, I mean, some of it's just going right into the pockets of the people that are destroying and then rebuilding Iraq, and that's pretty horrible. But part of it is going to pay the interest on the loans to foreign lenders. Is that okay with you? Foreign ownership of treasuries has tripled from the peak of the Reagan deficits in 1983. All right. Moving on. Line one, is that where we're going? All right. Thank you, Jay Hudson. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Pete. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah, my name is Brandon from Flat Rock, and according to my boss, I've been diagnosed with a serious disease called being a liberal.
Yeah.
Yeah, many a nights I would argue with him that Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction, and he would come back with, they had the rockets that went 92 miles, and they were only allowed rockets that go 90.
Yeah, that was about it. That's what all this death and destruction's over.
Yeah, it's crazy. And worst thing is for some reason unbeknownst to me, I decided to join the Air Force. So when I saw Bush was winning, I looked over at some of the people I was with, and I was like, oh, this isn't good.
It's so horrible. You're in the Air Force now?
Yeah, I'm waiting to ship out.
To Iraq?
No, to basic training.
Oh.
So I was hoping for Kerry to come in and maybe save a couple of us, but...
Well, Air Force if you get into combat, losses for Air Force have been pretty minimal over the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, but we're looking at probably going to Iran sometime soon if they don't get their weapons of mass destruction. So,
well, I don't know, Brandon. There's the United States doesn't have right now the troop strength to be able to decisively prevail in Iraq. They're not going on to Iran. Iran has an enormous modern functioning army. I don't think there's any way in the world. Well, I mean, I'd hate to make this bad prediction. I made a correct prediction. I mean, which was an easy one, that Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction, but. I hope this one is good as well. Well, good luck. I hope everything turns out for the best for you.
Yeah, there's one more thing.
Sure.
You know, all those people who are saying that, you know, abortion's bad and fetuses and embryos, instead of asking that, because I remember you said you had the question, you said, you know, your wife had an abortion, is she a murderer? A good question that I found asked people is if they run into a burning building and on one side's a baby and one side's 12 embryos, which ones do you save?
Yeah,
most
sure.
Say the baby, and that means they'll sacrifice those 12 lives.
They're a pack of hypocrites.
Yes,
thank you, Brandon, and best of luck to you.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Nick in Ann Arbor writes in to calltalkass@yahoo.com. I was saying that people are sending me these photos, these awful, heart-wrenching photos of civilian casualties in Fallujah. And he says, that's a great idea. Show these warmongers these pictures of innocent dead Iraqis. They would say these pictures are anti-American. Yet these same people who carry around a dead fetus and pictures of aborted fetuses for all to see at their anti-abortion rallies, why don't they show these pictures so proudly? Those, you know, the Iraq pictures. Will their hypocrisy never end? Well, one could only hope. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. Just wanted to ask you if you knew about what was going on with the recount. I heard that David Cobb and Michael Badnarik both, I think it was in Ohio, they said that they were going to join in suit.
Yeah, the Green Party candidate for president and the Libertarian presidential candidate have joined together in an effort to recount all of the ballots in Ohio, and they need $1,000. I can't remember. Anyways, they need $110,000 to do it all, and there is an effort being made to raise it. And you can kind of go online.
Yeah, from what I heard, both of their sites are taking money, and then Nader's doing something in New Hampshire, I heard, and then also. There's another site for Ohio that's not related to the two third-party candidates that was called Help America Recount.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was .org. It could be .com.
You check it out. There's some of the sites. There's some of the sites that are on my website as well. There's one actually. If you have like a modem or DSL or something, check out this thing about how people voted in Florida, or the little example of how the machines worked in Florida. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. One other quick question, real quick. How you feel about four more years of Michael Powell?
Four more years and Michael Powell is head of the FCC. Well, the rats are abandoning ship at quite a rate. We had John Ashcroft resign. Now we're going to get torture man, Alberto Gonzalez, the guy that says torture's okay. Yeah, as long as you're doing it for the good old USA. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. Jay Hudson, line three and line one is ringing. Our light is out here. Actually, as we leave our old studios here in about a month or so, the old one we're in now to go to the new one, this thing is like no one's fixing anything at all. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
John Sapienza, Marine City. I'm one of those dumb monkeys that voted for Bush.
And you're ill? You're in ill health as well?
No. I'm getting a good chuckle here, and I appreciate your opinion. I kind of was wondering what your thought was on the oil for food scandal.
You know, that is such a big, complicated question. What? Tell me your interest in it and pose it a little
more.
Well,
I'm wondering what you thought, if that had any effect on France and Germany's refusal to back us in the war, if that was had anything to do with it.
You know, that's a common theme that I hear. But, you know, listen, these countries are all pretty slimy, and they all have their own little self-interests involved, and there's certainly international competition. One of the things that people have floated was that there was going to be an attempt to have Saddam Hussein be the lead in taking international trade in oil off the petrodollar and make it the petro-euro, which would have sunk the U.S. dollar to lows way beyond where it's going now.
Okay. Anyways, I appreciate your opinion, and I listen to every side. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. This is Jeff listening in Boca Raton, Florida. Running to calltalkers@yahoo.com. I'm listening to you discuss the idea that we should just leave Iraq. Here is the sad, sad truth. We are never leaving. We never leave anywhere. Spanish-American War, Guantanamo, World War One, we left but went right back. World War Two, Japan, Germany, and all over the rest of Europe. Korea, still in Seoul and gearing up for more. Vietnam, we left but not for choice. Gulf One, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Qatar. Afghanistan, as if Karzai would let us leave. Gulf Two, Fort Baghdad is all but inevitable. Huh. So Jeff is saying, once the empire stakes out territory through war, like any of the previous empires, Germany or France, Britain, Rome, we don't go anywhere. But the end of all this is pretty unfortunate. And also, it's pretty unfortunate for the people frequently that that have to be. Reason I'm hesitating, it's sort of a mixed bag, obviously. A lot of the countries want the United States there because we're pumping our tax dollars there. When they, in some of these towns in Germany that heard U.S. bases were pulling out, whoa, wait a minute, we're going to lose all this money. Well, ultimately, it's our money. All right, right back.
This is the Riss Award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
Hey, Napoleon, where are you going?
I'm going to Waterloo to meet my enemies.
But you could get defeated if you go there.
Who cares? It's over for me anyway. My wife, Josephine, she's divorcing me. She has this tough lawyer who wants to take everything. My palace at Versailles, all the fancy medals I win, even my faithful horse, Pierre.
Well, there's no reason for a man to lose his home, his children, his money, or his self-respect.
Oh?
Now, Adam is here to protect you. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men. They're a group of highly qualified divorce attorneys and counselors who will defend the rights of men in any divorce case.
Ooh.
Adam will answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call the American Divorce Association for Men.
Hello, this is Napoleon the Great speaking.
Who is that, you nappy dally?
Josephine, what do you want from me now?
Adam is handling your divorce.
Yes, so?
Well, maybe after you conquer the rest of Europe, we could have lunch. I mean, it's nothing to lose your head over.
Call Adam at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
Do you have a friend? Yes? Okay, that's a good start. Now, do you like to save money? Wow, yes to both. then the Funjet Bring a Friend sale applies to you. For a limited time, Funjet Vacations is taking up to 50% off your friend's fare, making it the perfect time to get away. You'll both enjoy the luxurious, all-inclusive experience of Palace Resorts, located in unique and yet equally beautiful regions of Cancun, the Riviera Maya, Cozumel, and Puerto Vallarta. Get there fast with Funjet Vacations' nonstop air service to these great destinations. Whether the two of you seek total privacy or all-out fun, Palace Resorts has a place to captivate your mind, body, soul, and sense of savor. So not only will you save your friend up to 50% off their fare, but if you weren't in their will before, you will be now. Purchase your trip by November 28th through Cadillac Travel at 248-358-5330. May not be available for all departure dates and hotel properties, subject to limited availability and change with or without notice. Other restrictions apply. See the Funjet Bill of Rights or Funjet.com for details.
The party is here at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Every week, Leopard's Lounge brings you new girls from all over the world, so it never gets boring. And these girls are hot. And unlike other gentlemen's clubs, which we won't mention, Leopard's Lounge never has a cover charge, ever. They even have free parking. It's an offer you can't refuse. Join the Riff and the beautiful Leopard's Lounge girls every Tuesday night for your chance to win tons of free Riff gear, tickets to cool stuff, and, well, let's just say special attention from the smoking hot Leopard's Lounge ladies. And this Tuesday night, Leopard's Lounge is having a free wild game dinner at 7 p.m. Make your reservation now. Get ready to enjoy the finer things in life. You know what I'm talking about. Beer, sexy, beautiful women, tons of free stuff, and a free wild game dinner. Hey, it just doesn't get any better. Don't miss the fun this Tuesday night with 101 WRIF at Leopard's Lounge in Windsor, just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge and Broil.
Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby. Coming up next.
I felt like I was in someone's living room shopping. It was so comfortable.
Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry customer, Gloria Kugler.
That's Jared.
And my son said the same thing. We were just talking about the jewelry store, and he says, I just love that store, Mom.
This holiday, Jared has hundreds of diamond bracelets, earrings, necklaces, and rings to choose from. Set in yellow, white, or two-tone gold and platinum. Prices range from $100 to $10,000.
Whether it be a $500 gift, a $200 gift, a $100 gift, or a $5,000 or $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 gift, it's in that store. Jared.
Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry, will amaze you with our holiday gift selection. The area's best collection of independently certified diamonds designed by Levion and the incredibly brilliant Leo Diamond. Jared offers free financing for 1 year. Minimum purchase and minimum monthly payment required.
It can only be Jared.
Jared on Baldwin Road in Auburn Hills, across from 12 Oaks and Novi, in Utica at M59 and the Van Dyke Expressway, and our newest store across from Oakland Mall in Troy.
Psst. Hey, late night listeners. David Hall reporting for Rock Financial. Rock Financial's giving away $100,000. That's right, it's Rock Financial's Dash for the Cash. Yep, I said it. We're giving away $100,000. And while others are sleeping, you can enter to win right now at rockfinancial.com during any Lions game this season. When the Detroit Lions return the opening kickoff for a touchdown, one lucky fan is going to win up to $100,000 to pay off their mortgage. But you got to register to win. You got to go to rockfinancial.com. That's rockfinancial.com. It's the Dash for the Cash exclusively from the mortgage experts at Rock Financial. And while you're at rockfinancial.com, check out our mortgage calculators. See how much home you can afford? Maybe if it makes sense to refinance. Go right now, rockfinancial.com. It's the Dash for the Cash. You could win $100,000 from the mortgage experts. rockfinancial.com.
Visit rockfinancial.com for official rules. Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company and equal housing lender.
101 WRIF Detroit. Call in with your comments at 313-298-WRIF. Now, Night Call returns. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. 1 a.m., remember, Eastern Time. We'll be doing a couple of interviews, one with columnist for Counterpunch.org, Dave Lindsdorf, and then the renowned ecologist, David Suzuki, at 1:30. You know, I've got to think about this. I don't want to talk about it right now. Maybe I'll bring it up next week. People are saying, I've never gotten this before, but I've probably got about 8 or 10 right-wingers saying that my website is so filled with hate. I mean, it's pretty critical of Bush. Hate Bush? I'm willing to say yeah to that one. Anyways, Ed from Warren writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. You know what, Peter? I think people just don't give a damn. In terms of innocent people dying for an unjust war, people just put it on the back burner. Don't think about it at all. After all, we have better things to do than think about the hell in Iraq. Well, sure. Yeah, we got the sports teams to play for us. We got the armed forces to bring about the valor, the pathos, the mourning, the victory, the triumphalism, all of that. We Americans are shielded from the truth, and we believe the lies that are given to us. So when people still say that Iraq is a just cause, I no longer try and convince them that they're wrong, because I know they believe that, then there is no point in trying to break down that wall of ignorance. That's pretty sad. Well, part of the problem is there's just not enough voices like mine. There's not enough newspapers. They're all run by either corporate and or right-wing forces. So, we're lucky that there's anybody. I mean, it's a testament to the American people that 55 million of us said no to George W. Bush. Someone wrote in here. Let me see if I can find this quickly. Gertie writes in, watch TV and be in complete oblivion regarding the rest of the world in fear, of course. You'll get a pack of following idiots. In this election, there should not have been more than 10% for Bush. Well, I agree. James writes in that, among other things, the Bush states have a much higher murder rate as well. That's just absolutely amazing. All right, let's continue on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing good.
You know, my father, he was a political activist, and I listened to a lot of things that you were saying. He was a political activist in the 60s during the war in Vietnam, and we was talking about it. He was telling me the other day that it makes him sad because he's seeing a lot of things that are happening today as far as the war and the efforts to stop the war are the same things. He sees a lot of the defeat that people felt with the way things went when he was, in his 20s. And with Bush being elected, even though people didn't want it, and he said it makes him sad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the thing that makes him sad about it, when Bush first was elected, there was just something about him that made us both wipe our hands on our pants at the thought of shaking our hands like slimy.
Yeah.
But, and this is, I listen to you, and we've listened to you before, and you listen a lot, and this is to everybody that's out there. You listen to a lot of people question what this man's doing. But, you hear dumb this and ignorant that, and, reaching out, questioning these people's beliefs, the Republicans, and not the government Republicans, but the people that voted and calling them dumb and ignorant and everything, that's what makes him sad, because that was how it was for him, and he's seen how it didn't get him anywhere, but it didn't change anything except make the people, the Republicans that voted, not the government, the people that are Republicans, They didn't trust anything he said, because all he was doing was calling him an idiot and calling him dumb
In other words, that their opinions hardened. Well, that is the mantra, particularly of the right. In fact, Mark just wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Conservatism won the election. Left's hatred caused self destruction. I just think I just don't buy it. For one thing, the right wing is so filled with hatred of and rage, that, and they try to project it off onto us. The reason that people hated Bush so badly was he stole the election in 2000 to begin with. Then he began this far right wing revolution, even though he had lost the popular vote. And he had begun to destroy what this country had built over the last 100 years, lied about this war. Well, don't you think that that's kind of going to, create some animosity?
I believe it will, I'm a regular guy. I'm not like my, he was really into it. And I mean, I just want to have a good life for me and my kid. You know what I mean? But
sure.
I can't help. This is a man. My father was in my eyes, is a great man. He was really into it, and he's saying, we need to do the things differently then, you know, the constant, he's just, I mean, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Listen, if, to say to people, and that there are people listening, if I, it is saying that the people that voted for Bush are dumb, unhealthy, immoral, hypocrites, and what have you, it probably doesn't gain any points with them. I agree. That's what you're saying, right?
Well, that, not me. I want you. I want you, and I want the people that listen. That it isn't just the opinion of a Republican. Because you know, I hear that a lot too. But like, you know, guys like, you know, so-called takes no side, and he isn't. You know, he doesn't stand for the Republican Party, Bill O'Reilly. But yeah, okay, whatever.
I sure. Mean, you know, what a lie.
You know, whatever. I don't really care. But he says, you know. People hear that too, and they, you know, and.
Well, no, you know, actually, listen, I think you're making a good point. You don't, you know, my Tai Chi teacher says that, tells me, keeps telling me, I have to be more compassionate to bring everyone into my heart, to have an open heart. And it's hard these days. I usually tell her that she's got such a big heart, she should take him into to hers. But, I mean, I think there's some truth to that. And I think a little of what is happening here with all the name-calling is not the political criticism of Bush, which is more than warranted, and began the hatred, the disunity, the division of this country came right out of the Republicans when they began their attack on Clinton. They were outraged that the presidency was taken from Pappy Bush. And they were relentless in their attacks on anyone to the left of Mussolini. The conservatives, as you know, this guy wrote, Conservatism Triumph. This represents a tiny slice of American life, yet these authoritarians have been able to seize the major institutions of our society, and they are carrying out a far right-wing revolution that's going to hurt all of us. And I think that has to be said. And that, you know, and I think if people voted for that, they're just damn dumb. And people can call me up and say, well, I think you're dumb because I did this or that. I mean, I'm willing to stand for that. If I call them a name, they can call me a name right back. Might not be the most effective way to approach people. I agree with you. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. We were talking earlier about using the F word, and Glenn wrote in. Did you notice that your sister station, WXYZ Channel 7, is that our, that's not our sister station, was one of the stations that refused to carry Saving Private Ryan on Veterans Day? Supposedly it was because of the F word. You know, I don't think that's at all, and I know what you're suggesting, Glenn. It wasn't that at all, but rather because it was so anti-war. Here, well, the overtime question, too, that one, oh, man, this is, Rob, this is way too long. The latest, as I understand it, about the overtime changes by Bushko, he had his Labor Department change its regulations, allow up to 10 million people to be reclassified as exempt from overtime regulations. It's too long, because someone asked about that. I'm going to have to read it and then get it to you later. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, this is Ed from Detroit.
Hi, Ed.
How you doing?
Good.
I wanted to ask you a question about Iraq. Actually, I just wanted to roll back, kind of get beyond this election and go all the way back to the beginnings of this war, and get beyond the politics of Bush bad, Kerry good, and get to the heart of the question of why we began this war in the first place. And I think part of the problem, part of cracking the nut in this problem, is the original policy that the policy of preemptive war, which began this whole question of whether or not we should go into a country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not discussed much anymore about actually how that policy, how the evolution of that policy, not only changed our leaders in this country, also changed our like a paradigm shift on how all of us think about how we go about affecting change in this world. And I think that's not discussed much anymore, and I think the policy itself has locked the American people. It's become our war, I think, more than even Bush's war. And I think it's part of the problem is that the whole policy of preemption is basically accepted. And so whether or not a president lies about weapons of mass destruction, no longer is the crux of the point. It's the point that we should support our president, whether or not he's right, whether or not he's lying, because we've committed ourselves to preempt in situations of terrorism, situations of nuclear weapons. And I don't think that's discussed anymore. The fallacy of that policy, the fallacy of preemption, the danger of that, and how that forces the United States into unilateral action, because the rest of the world does not accept preemptive war and does not accept the policy of preemptive war.
Well, Kofi Annan, head of the UN, was right. This is an illegal war. And there's no basis for it in international law. That Bush tried to ring a resolution to allow the United States to attack because they knew that the inspectors were going to not find any weapons of mass destruction. That was all a big lie. And so that's when all of a sudden they just said, whoa, we got to go, because if they had waited even 30 days like France said, it would have become clear that there would have been no basis whatsoever. But preemption has been the policy of the United States for the last 100 years. The United States has invaded dozens of countries throughout Latin America and Asia.
Well, we've been involved in what it used to be known as police actions, as I recall, as I grew up. But the first time.
But wait a minute, where is that?
The picture. Well,
where is that in the Constitution?
It's not in the Constitution.
Right.
But I mean the direct involvement of the American military in terms of an attack on a sovereign nation. The first time I ever realized that could happen was during the Clinton administration, when he launched missiles into Serbia, and that was in response to what was happening in Kosovo. And at the time, that alarmed me. I could, you know, that happened during the hearings on Monica Lewinsky and the impeachment.
Now, wait a minute. That was just completely a coincidence, Ed.
Well, I know it's a complete coincidence. I'm not. You wonder sometimes.
Sure,
but,
you do.
But in fact, it wasn't Bush who started the policy of preemption.
No.
In fact, if you looked at that war, Clinton, in fact, started at least the evolution of it, and it rolled right into October of 2002 in both houses of Congress, where you had Senator Kerry, you had Senator Clinton,
Senator Edwards,
voting in favor of preemption by abdicating Congress's role in voting a war resolution, actually giving the president the right to act in a preemptive manner.
Do this, Ed. I have to move on. Give me a summary statement, if you would.
Well, I just wanted to say is that I think a lot of people are in line with this new policy of preemption, and I think a lot of people might vote for Bush, might vote for any president, whether or not there are weapons of mass destruction.
To affirm that. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thanks for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. This is Kevin, regular listener. I just had a comment about the deficit issue.
About the what? The deficit.
Sure. I guess all the bills that our U.S. Mint prints, I guess 60% of that is outside the United States, so it's in foreign circulation. So with all these countries watching our currency dropping and they have their reserves in our money, turn around and start selling it off like they are. I guess China, Japan, and India started doing that. Imagine if all that money came back here. Can you imagine inflation will be worse than what happened before World War II in Germany?
That's interesting.
We have a complete meltdown of our financial infrastructure. And we can't tell them that don't return our money. Well, what are we going to do? Disown our currency?
Yeah. Well, that's why even a small country like Cuba, which has just forbid the circulation of dollars, and I think it was November. I came losing track of the days. I think it's gone by where the Cubans had to divest themselves of the dollar. Where there's a dollar, like in some Latin American countries, has virtually, or in fact, officially become the currency of that particular nation, that could be just a harbinger of what other countries could do. I mean, we could slide in a minute. I mean, anybody that's got so much debt out and on such a shaky basis, who knows what the hell could happen.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you for calling. Do we got one more call? Line two. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening. More power to women than black.
All right. Well, good. Although probably everybody doesn't know what you mean, but what the hell. Go ahead.
Well, they're a good group, and I couldn't make it Saturday because I'm living in what a friend of mine calls the full thrust of the George Bush economy.
All right.
Having to work for a living and, you know, making minimum wages. My well, I have one comment on your prior caller, the one who was talking about Kosovo.
Yeah.
We went into Kosovo with UN support and the support of the European nations, all of whom sent in troops, you know, to work in there to end what was going on at that time.
Uh-huh.
You know, Iraq was just totally unilateral. You know, Bush said, hey, we got to attack Iraq. You know, hey, the economy's tanking, attack Iraq. Hey, you know, there's a deficit, hey, attack Iraq.
Hey, we had the coalition of the billing, all these countries that we've given hundreds and millions and billions of dollars to.
To come in and.
To join us.
Yeah.
And they're all starting to leave, by the way, you know, all the smaller ones, at least.
Almost all of them have left except Britain, and that brings me to my main point, which is the founding document of this country was something called the Declaration of Independence, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one body to, you know, cast off the ties that bind it to another political body.
Yeah.
If you read that, it's an indictment of George Bush's America.
Huh.
You know, you read it from an Iraqi viewpoint, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses.
Well, before you read all of that, I will take that as a given and say thank you, because actually you're our last caller and I have to leave right now, but thank you very much for having joined us, and same with all of you. And if I've hurt anybody's feelings, too bad. I still love you as an audience. All right, what I was going to do, and I've done this a couple of times now, I think I might start doing this, at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, when we start this show, I always play a little snippet of a song, and then I play the whole thing as we go out. So this is A Perfect Circle with John Lennon's Imagine on Night Call. No, it's not. Let's see. I'm glad I'm not doing this as a DJ. All right, there we go. There we go. There we go. I think. Yeah.
No hell below us.
imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. Brotherhood of man. Imagine no
advertising absurdly low rates? Or how about all those programs that are exclusive only to them? Well, the truth is, all these companies work with the same rates and the same programs. They are not exclusive to any one mortgage lender. It's nerve-wracking enough trying to buy a new home or figuring out how you're going to get all your debt paid off. The last thing you need is more stress from a mortgage company throwing unrealistic programs and rates at you. If you're looking for someone who will give you honest answers about your individual situation, whether it's buying a new home, refinancing, or consolidating your debt, then you absolutely need to call Mike Jenkins at First Horizon Home Loans at 877-505-8600, extension 222. You'll receive a free mortgage analysis, and you'll be able to decide for yourself which program is best for you. So call Mike Jenkins with First Horizon Home Loans today and find out how you can get home with less stress. That's 877-505-8600, extension 222. Loan subject to approval. First Horizon Home Loans is an equal housing lender.
Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist, whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How
are you? What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to Coach Nick Saban after his loss to Auburn over the weekend, and we had to get his thoughts on his replacement, Jonnell Smith.
I think he's doing a fine job, but first of all, three words, collagen rebuilding serum. if he's leading the Big Ten in anything, it's dead epidermal cells. I don't think 10 minutes in a tanning bed would kill the guy either.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't like to pass advice along. I let the guy make his own mistakes.
Well, you know, he's pretty pasty looking, actually. You're right.
I think that's why he left Louisville. They used the gray for the coaching shirts, and he looked so washed out and ashy. I think a guy complected like that, at some point, has got to coach a team that has primary colors.
Well, Nick, not to bring this whole thing down, but what went wrong against Auburn?
Well, you mix together an unfamiliar 1875 Revlon with a Bumble and Bumble Stylers, throwing some unforeseen humidity, and that's what you get.
That's not like you to blame defeat on weather conditions, though.
I'm not talking about the game. I'm talking about that sweat-soaked, wind-blown mess on the top of my head.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program on the Riff. 101.1 WRIF. Riff rocks.
When it's 5 o'clock, it's time to rock with the Riff.
Weekday afternoons at 5, right here on 101 WRIF.
Your ride home rocks with Big Daddy Arthur P. Playing your Riff Rockin' Request. Call in your Riff Rockin' Request to the Grand Poobah at 313-298-WRIF.
Email them to arthurp@wrif.com.
Hell, you can even fax them in before you ditch the office at 248-398-6219. Call for the tunes that you want to hear. Win yourself some killer Riff swag and let the ride home rock with the Riff's own Big Daddy Arthur Penalo.
Riff is the only station letting you pick your favorites and program the station 3 times a day at noon, 5 and 9.
It's your all-request Riff Rock and Ride Home with Big Daddy Arthur P.
From the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff.
Rocks.
This is WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with Maury Povich.
Drew and Mike, you are not the father.
Oh, thank God.
That's great. We're going to use that time and time again in our life.
What is the longest and the most attempts it's taken to find the father?
Periodically, we do these paternity updates.
Right.
We keep bringing the women back.
Yeah.
We have Georgetta on for her 10th time.
Her 10th time?
How many guys did she sleep with in this
wow.
1 month?
We're just trying to figure it out.
You know what's funny, too, is that a lot of times when the guy is pronounced the father, and up till then it's been, ah, you ho, and
right.
There's no way to... And then when he is the father, it's always cracks me up how they're like, oh, no, I'm going to take care of the baby. And I'm always thinking, like, yeah, right, like 2 weeks from now, you are so gone. Which is funny, too, Maury, when it turns out like he's not the father, and she's absolutely convinced of it, and then, of course, she runs backstage absolutely crying and bawling, right. You have to hug her.
Right.
Please tell me that you're not as sincere as you seem to be.
Well, what you figure out is that after about the fourth or fifth time with a particular woman, they all know the exits better than I do.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
101-101.
Riff.
Riff rocks the West Side Tuesday night.
It's Party Central on the West Side this Tuesday night with 101 WRIF at Snooker's Pool and Pub.
In Livonia on the northwest corner of Schoolcraft and Inkster, just off I-96.
Yeah! Join Meltdown, the big unit, for the biggest Tuesday night party in the Motor City.
Join in the WRIF Pool Challenge to score awesome Riff prizes.
Like CDs, T-shirts, tickets, and so much more.
Come on out and see what you've been missing Tuesday nights with the Riff at Snooker's.
Not yet.
That's this Tuesday night at the Westside Party Command Center, Snooker's Pool and Pub, on the northwest corner of Schoolcraft and Inkster, just up I-96 in Livonia,
with the Motor City's home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff rocks.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Fight him and get him to come back periodically. I see his articles all over the internet, in books, and anywhere that ideas that usually aren't in the mainstream, most of which I would consider to be near to worthless, appear. Dave Lindorf is his name, and welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, on your website, thiscan'tbehappening.net, thiscan'tbehappening.net, and don't do like I did on my website. I put in the apostrophe there. And
they won't take that.
No, a sharp-eyed reader of the website said, no, got to get rid of that. But it's thiscan'tbehappening.net. And one of the questions is, who the hell is Dave Lindorf? So there's so much here. How would you define yourself just in a couple sentences? You're an investigative reporter. You've been doing it for 30 years.
Yep. It's my avocation and my vocation.
Mm-hmm.
I started out in daily newspapers, and I've graduated to working for myself and increasingly right on the web, because that's where all the good journalism is being done.
Yeah, and actually, the Salon.com story, as I was saying, that you do this incredible work, and then it's as so many stories that would have importance to people to help them make up their decision about what's going on in their lives and in the country. it became one of the most censored stories of 2003. It's award by Project Censored, and this was an October 16, 2003 story in Salon.com on the Pentagon's quiet efforts to gear up the machinery for a return to the draft. Is it frustrating at all to do all this work, stuff that should be emblazoned on the front page of the papers in Philadelphia where you live and Detroit where I live, first lead story on the network news, and it's not?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a long, hard struggle, I think, for people to start to realize that the mainstream media that they get in hard copy on paper and that they watch on television is really the junk journalism, and that they're being misinformed. And that, I think what the problem is the Internet's pretty new, but it's also full of a lot of crap. And so it's requiring people to be intelligent readers of it. But, you know, the truth is, if you're not an intelligent reader of the mainstream press, it's crap too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think gradually people are starting to realize it. I mean, geez, Counterpunch is getting 20 million hits a month now. And Salon Magazine, I'm not sure what their hit list is, but it's quite high now.
Now, counterpunch.org, by the way, people always say, where do you get this information, Werby? Like I've got some secret sources. They're not secret, people. It, for one thing, it includes a desire to really want to know, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's true. But the nice thing about the Internet, which you don't get from reading newspapers, is when you read the New York Times, you're stuck with the New York Times. But when you read Salon or Counterpunch, you've got all these hot links which will take you to their sources. So your footnotes are basically right in the piece, and you can jump to another source and hop around and get quite a bit of information that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dave Lindorf, let's talk a little about some of the stories you've been tracking recently. And one is just almost facetiously, I've been calling the Battle of the Bulge, or maybe I did steal that from you. But let's start with a battle of life and death, and that's the Battle of Fallujah. And I think we should tell people that we are recording this on Thursday, November 11th. There's a second assault occurring this afternoon, or it's probably evening by now. The United States forces have already taken half of the city. You compare it to the battle for Hue in Vietnam almost 40 years ago. What's the comparison there?
Well, I think it's quite similar. The what happened in Vietnam, if you recall, in Tet, was that the Vietnamese conquered Hue, which was the second city of second or third city and the ancient imperial capital of Vietnam, and they were welcomed with open arms by many of the residents, and at that point the U.S. had to take it back, and in doing so they killed countless civilians, alienated the population of the city entirely, and destroyed the city. And that is somewhat parallel to what's happened in Fallujah. With the first attack, they wrecked a lot of this city, which is so full of mosques that it's called the City of Mosques. And now they're proceeding to destroy the rest of it to take it back. There are reports that there may be as many as 100,000 civilians in the city, which is being bombed with 2,000-pound, 1,000-pound, 500-pound bombs, hit with all kinds of tanks and DUI, you know, depleted uranium munitions. I mean, when they're done, they'll have conquered the city. I'm sure they will win. And what will they win? They'll win a destroyed and flattened city, as they did in Najaf, only in this case, it's a city that once had 500,000 people in it. And they'll have alienated everyone in that city. And on top of that, what have we got now? The people who they wanted to catch had all left months ago or weeks ago and are all over the country now. So I saw one piece that said Iraq is now 1,000 Fallujahs.
Hmm. Now,
what's achieved?
Yeah. I had a thought there, but let me just go to what was in front of me here. Counterpunch, where Dave Lindorf, you're a columnist for Patrick Coburn, the brother of Alexander Coburn, who's the co-publisher of Counterpunch.org. He says crushing Fallujah will not end the Iraq war. What could be the strategy here? It seemed like the U.S. as occupiers are sort of damned if they do and damned if they don't. If they allow this to be a competing center of power, that's damning them that way. And it certainly seems like this is not going to help the situation there either.
No, I think Damned If They Do, Damned If They Don't is actually an accurate portrayal. They were, it was a thumb in the eye at this point that they had to cancel their first invasion of Fallujah because it was causing too many casualties. And so they had to come back with, I think there was an incredible cold calculation by the Bush administration not to go in before the elections because they were afraid that Americans facing the reality of what they were doing might turn against the president. So they waited. But in waiting, what they did is they, first of all, allowed the insurgents who were in Fallujah to prepare the city for the invasion and to leave. So the whole leadership is gone. Most of the insurgents are gone. A few diehards are left to inflict some casualties. And in the end, they achieved nothing except destroying the city. It's just incredibly stupid.
Well, we know that in Vietnam, all dead were counted as Viet Cong. And I heard today one Marine officer saying that, that the United States had killed 600 terrorists, as he put it.
Well, let's look at that. I mean, we've perpetrated, I will say with absolute certainty that we've perpetrated a war crime on a massive scale in Fallujah, because what they did is they ringed the city with troops, and then they said that women, children, and old people could leave. But they said that men of fighting age, men and boys of fighting age, were barred from leaving. Now, that implied that men and boys of fighting age are all insurgents, which is nonsense. And so we trapped illegally tens of thousands and maybe as many as 100,000 males. And no doubt some women chose to stay with their spouses or boyfriends or whatever. So all those people are trapped in Fallujah by the U.S. by deliberate policy, and then we attack them, and then we say, as you said, anybody we kill is an insurgent. You don't hear them say we killed 300 insurgents and 300 civilians. They just don't do that.
Now, Donald Rumsfeld, Secretary of War for the United States, who's strategy this was, sort of fighting on the cheap, taking troops away from trying to capture Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan and putting...
Who?
Yeah. Oh, well, we call him here Osama bin Forgotten. Right. They just trot him out at appropriate times or something.
Yeah, right.
Some look-alike or something like that. He now is saying that this will have to be done in 15 or 16 other cities.
Right.
This is absolutely implausible that even the arrogance of the Bush regime would attempt to carry this out. Or do you think that they're serious?
Oh, I think they're serious, and they will have to, because I was just reading that and as they concentrate on this nonsense in Fallujah, the al-Sadr forces have retaken areas of Baghdad that they'd been pushed out of. So it's like squeezing the balloon, you know, wherever they put the troops, the insurgents will melt. Remember the term melt away? That's
mm-hmm.
What insurgents do. They melt away and then go somewhere else. And so it's a hopeless situation. The sooner it's ended, the better. But I fear that we're in for 4 years of this, because I don't see how Bush can back out. The more Americans die, the harder it is for him to leave, since it's all his doing.
Well, I don't know how Kerry could have done anything any differently. Sometimes when I do talk radio, people will say to me, well, what's your solution, Mr. Smart Guy? And I say, hey, wait a minute. This isn't the result of my policy over the last 25 years. Let the smart guys in Washington with the suits figure this out.
No, don't let them do it.
No. But if they were, like, really had to create a solution that worked for the benefit of the Iraqi people, not the oil companies, not U.S. foreign policy, they would come up with what? I mean, the fear, of course, is that a precipitous withdrawal, although I still think that's the best option. At least the argument goes, this would create a civil war, and worse than we're seeing now. Staying in there, you're right. There's going to be more and more deaths of Iraqi citizens, and American troops.
Well, I had actually voted for Kerry on the faint hope, and I admit that it's totally faint, that his experience with Vietnam would convince him once he was in the White House and had to listen to what the generals are saying, which Bush doesn't do, that he would have taken his quick opportunity at the start and pulled out rather than get saddled with 4 years of war and see a first term destroyed. So, but it was a faint hope. I do think that the only answer is to get out, and I think that the argument about the Civil War bloodbath theory, which was also what they used to say about Vietnam and they
right.
say about every action the U.S. gets snared in, is pathetic when you consider that we've already apparently killed 100,000 Iraqis. I mean, they're having a bloodbath.
Mm-hmm.
The statistics that we don't read about in the U.S. press coming from the Iraqi government, our puppet government over there, say that the U.S. is killing more Iraqis than the insurgents are, and that we are killing civilians at a rate that is double the rate we're killing enemy fighters at. So, you know, if you do that, how can you call killing civilians collateral damage? I mean, really, you'd have to say that killing enemy combatants is the collateral damage of our military.
My guest on the Peter Werbe Show, Dave Lindorf, and Dave Lindorf's most recent book is This Can't Be Happening. It's available from Common Courage. You can go to commoncouragepress.org or thiscan'tbehappening.net. Leave out the apostrophe, please. Let's move on to some domestic things. And we were talking about the battle for Fallujah. I mentioned earlier that you had received an award, one of the most censored stories of 2003 from Project Censored about the Pentagon's efforts to gear up the machinery for a return to the draft. And also a story that you did a lot of work on that barely raised the ripples in the mainstream press was another Battle of the Bulge, and that was what George Bush was wearing on his back during the debates. Frame that for us. Redefine the issue, if you would, please,
well,
Dave Lindorf.
Yeah, I call it Bulgegate. What happened is, you know, a lot of people noticed, myself included, that during the first debate, the president had a peculiar rectangular bulge in his behind his back of his jacket, and I had written about that, and it was the first sort of mainstream article that referred to that, and it took off. The Times and the Washington Post picked up a little on it, but then the Rove machine went into full gear to try to debunk it by saying it was internet conspiracy and people were in the grassy knoll circuit, and they tried to make light of it. They initially suggested that it was doctored photos. They weren't doctored photos. They were right off of the video feeds from Fox TV and C-SPAN.
And the Bush explanation was that it was a wardrobe malfunction, right?
Well, that was after they were forced to back away from the claim that it was doctored photos and conspiracy theorists. When their fallback was it was a wrinkled, badly tailored suit. That's been debunked because they have the tailor who made the suit is the same tailor who's made the suits for some of our best dressed presidents, Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton.
And it totally cheesed him also.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's one of the great suit makers of all time, and he does three fittings for each suit that he makes. And then Bush himself got on Good Morning America and claimed it was not a wrinkled suit, it was a badly tailored shirt. But nobody bothered to follow up and say, well, was it badly tailored for all three debates?
Yeah. Now, I mean, we are defining this problem. We're talking about a transmitter through which Bush would receive information or actual facts, figures, statements to say, the premise being that he was clueless by himself.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I should add that you know, the real solid evidence of this thing came from a NASA scientist at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, is one of their senior scientists who's in charge of photo imaging for the Cassini Saturn spacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And he, on his own, examined a digital picture of that he took himself from the screen of a videotape of the first debate. This was just out of his own curiosity, but when he used the same enhancement techniques that he uses for the satellite imagery, he pulled out of the picture, so you can see it really clearly, this whole device that's quite elaborate on his back, plus a wire up over the shoulder. If people go to my site, I still have the picture up there to that you can look at.
That's at thiscan'tbehappening.net?
That's right.
Right.
Now, this was really stunning stuff, and he then, at my request, he did the same thing to pictures from the other two debates, and those were posted at the Mother Jones site. It's a little hard to find now because they've archived it, but you can find it if you look around.
Well,
this was a Dr. Robert Nelson. Now, the interesting thing here is that, you know, he is convinced that this was a transceiver for picking up signals and then relaying them to a wireless hidden earpiece. And there are plenty of these you can find in catalogs. The earpiece is tiny and goes down inside the ear canal where you can't see it, and the systems are used by actors and reporters on remotes.
Well, Dave Lindorf, I have great respect for the work you do, but let me play the skeptic here.
Go ahead.
Okay. First and foremost, if this was, I figure, the 1970s, maybe, okay, but the big bulge, there is this big rectangular bulge. There's no way to get around that. I mean, I absolutely agree that it's there, that it's not fake, that that's right off the Fox feed and what have you. But miniaturization is what's happening. It's not just these little earpieces. You don't need a receiver that's like 6 inches long. Okay, that's one of my skeptical observations.
Well, one of the things that I did was talk to people who make these things, and one of the guys that makes them for the military and the U.S. government looked at it and said that that's what it is, and he said the reason it's large is because it has descrambler in it, descrambler capability, and that the reason you could have direct transmission to an earpiece, but then it would be a fairly high wattage transmission that would not be scrambled, and it would be easy for someone to intercept it. Whereas with this device, you can send a scrambled signal, and then the transmission to the ear is done at an extremely low wattage that you couldn't pick up beyond a few feet away.
All right, here's another skeptical observation on my part. Most people, particularly the critics such as yourself and me, realize that Bush is not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Okay, so he's
right.
Listening. He's listening to Kerry. He's thinking about what he has to say next, and he's getting voices in his ear. Now, I know that there's this part where, at one point, everyone's just calmly looking at him, and he says, "Let me finish."
Yeah.
You go like, and they, you know, and the moderator.
A couple of really embarrassingly long silences.
Yeah, that it seems like I could not deal. Like, if somebody now was saying, "All right, ask Lindorf, you know, what about, you know, this in his past?" I'd be, and trying to listen, you know what I'm saying, and listen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you have anything in your past, Dave, but you know what I'm saying?
I would enough there.
I would find it extraordinarily difficult. How could a guy like Bush, that just fractures the English language, find that useful? I would find it extraordinarily distracting.
Well, my own theory, and I have to say it's totally a theory, is that he was using this device for some time now, and we have evidence of that from older pictures we've found, probably for giving speeches, maybe for giving press conferences. Because remember, this is a guy who, until this debate, had never, during his presidency, done anything spontaneous in public. Everything he does is scripted. His press conferences are fake, where, you know, the reporters have to submit their questions in advance in writing. And he actually, when it looks like he's picking people at random, he actually has already decided who he's picking based on those submissions. And he has a map on his lectern of who sits where, and he knows who he's going to ask. And our wonderful Washington Press Corps goes along with the charade that it's impromptu. But none of his answers are unscripted. And so what he was getting with the earpiece in the past was pre-set answers that he already knew about. So they were just reminding him of things that he already knew he was going to say. And that's the usual way these are used. They're used by actors, for instance, to remind them of their lines and that sort of thing. And that's helpful. But I think what happened, and this is total speculation on my part, I think when they got around to him doing his rehearsal for the debates, he probably totally bombed. And they thought, my God, what are we going to do? And they thought, well, let's put the old harness on and give him hints when he gets hung up. And the problem with that, as you've mentioned, is that it's very hard to do when you don't know what's coming. And for instance, people like yourself have in the talk radio profession have told me that it takes a long time to get used to the earpiece with the engineer talking into your ear while you're trying to do your monologue.
Yeah, I've rarely had to do that. When I've done that, I've found it disconcerting. Sometimes when I was doing talk radio on this national network, I'd be talking along, and I'd say, and furthermore, and then someone would say, you know, Al from Topeka on line three, and it would totally throw me.
Right.
Anyway, we only have about 2 minutes left, and I did want to go on to another current event, which was the nomination of Alberto Gonzalez to the post of Attorney General now that Ashcroft has stepped down. And we don't have a lot of time for that, but maybe you could just summarize quickly, Dave Lindorf, some of the features that probably they're not bragging about Gonzalez's
past.
Well,
this is a guy, you know, predictably the papers are, a lot of the press is portraying him as a moderate choice compared to Ashcroft, but I'm not sure that's true. This is a guy who gave us Abu Ghraib, who gave us the Padilla and Hamdi cases of stripping American citizens of their basic constitutional rights to an attorney and to be charged with a crime and not just held indefinitely, and who gave us Guantanamo. I mean, all these, and also the mass arrests of legally green-carded residents of the country.
Well, this is the White House counsel, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
As White House counsel, he was the guy who signed off on the advice that all these various things, violating the Geneva Conventions, torture of captives, holding people indefinitely in Guantanamo and avoiding the Geneva Conventions, and then taking people like Padilla and holding him without charge indefinitely, even though he's an American citizen, and not letting him see a lawyer. These are all things that this guy recommended as legal. And he's been overturned on most of them by the courts, but his idea is you do it and then get as much done as you can before the courts slap you down.
Mm.
That's our new attorney general if he gets approved.
Dave Lindorf, 30 seconds, a real 30 seconds. What are you going to be looking for in the next, say, 30 days or till between now and the inauguration?
I think massive increase in the war in Iraq. Bush is going to try to win it as fast as he can, and it's just going to get worse. And I would look to, plans to institute a draft at some point, because I don't think they're going to have the manpower to handle the war he's going to get us into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can we call you back from time to time and
absolutely.
Do sort of one of these current events surveys? I think this is excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me. Again, you can go to thiscan'tbehappening.net. Do not put in the apostrophe and can't. And that is Dave Lindorf's site. It's also, you can find out about his book of the same name that's published by Common Courage Press. And check counterpunch.org, where Dave Lindorf is a columnist. Thank you so much for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you for having me on, Peter.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Getting ready to move into your new home? Got a business to relocate? Need help moving and packing delicate or fragile stuff? For your moving needs, don't bother calling the middleman when you can go straight to the boss. The professionals at Boss Moving and Service. Boss Moving and Service has been family owned and operated for over 20 years. They specialize in local moving with a fleet of 9 trucks. They carry a full line of packing materials. They're licensed by the state and fully insured. Boss is also your home and business relocation specialist. Whether it's one item, a piano, or organ, maybe a delicate antique or an entire truckload. Whatever you need to make your move go smoother, Boss Moving and Service has you covered. Compare Boss Moving's low prices to the other guys, and you'll learn what others in Metro Detroit have known for years. Don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss. Call the professionals at Boss Moving and Service toll-free at 800-706-6644. Call today for a free in-home estimate at 800-706-6644. Remember, don't mess with the middleman. Go straight to the boss.
Are you tired of hearing mortgage companies advertising absurdly low rates? Or how about all those programs that are exclusive only to them? Well, the truth is, all these companies work with the same rates and the same programs. They are not exclusive to any one mortgage lender. It's nerve-wracking enough trying to buy a new home or figuring out how you're going to get all your debt paid off. The last thing you need is more stress from a mortgage company throwing unrealistic programs and rates at you. If you're looking for someone who will give you honest answers about your individual situation, whether it's buying a new home, refinancing, or consolidating your debt, then you absolutely need to call Mike Jenkins at First Horizon Home Loans at 877-505-8600, extension 222. You'll receive a free mortgage analysis, and you'll be able to decide for yourself which program is best for you. So call Mike Jenkins with First Horizon Home Loans today and find out how you can get home with less stress. That's 877-505-8600, extension 222. Loan subject to approval. First Horizon Home Loans is an equal housing lender.
This is WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talk with Brenda Warner, whose husband Kurt is having a great season thus far with the Giants.
I told the Giants when they got Kurt that they were really signing both of us. Kind of like when Bill and Hillary were co-presidents. We're like co-quarterbacks. And it works.
So how'd you get Kurt to find himself?
You know, I yelled at him until I was blue in the face, but I didn't really have a breakthrough until I sat him down and broke down film, went over coverages.
Well, okay, who do you play this weekend?
We're at Lambeau, and just to give you an idea about how well we're playing right now,
yeah,
we just happen to have the highest over number in the league this week. Bet the house on the over. And just between you, me, and the pit boss, take the Giants and the points. I think we're a strong road team on grass.
Thanks for the tip, Brenda. Those overs make me nervous, so I gotta tell you.
Oh, awesome. Honey, dip it then. I dip that puppy all day. If you're over down to 38, you'll be doing victory shots at Crown Royal sometime late in the third quarter, and then you can switch to Shivas down the home stretch.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program.
On the Riff. 101-101.
Riff.
Rock.
The American people have a right to know.
When you need it hard, you need the Riff's Midnight Metal.
Tuesday through Thursday nights on the Riff.
Join Screamin' Scott Randall for the loudest hour on your radio.
That's what this is all about.
Midnight Metal on the Riff. Call in your heavier-than-hell requests at 313-298-WRIF. You can also fax in or email for requests and your chance to win killer Riff swag.
Send your faxes to 248-398-6219 or email screamin' at WRIF.com.
Get your fix of the heaviest 60 minutes in the Motor City. It's Midnight Metal.
Is America a better place to live because of our efforts?
Tuesday through Thursday nights with Screamin' Scott.
From your home for Midnight Metal, the home of rock and roll. 101. The Riff.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We took calls on embarrassing things your kids said.
Yeah, I took my 6-year-old son in to get a haircut, so I'm sitting 2 chairs down from him. And the lady that's getting cut in his hair has got kind of a bad complexion. Her hair's all frizzed up, et cetera. And I'm getting my hair cut, and I hear him say, "You look like a monster."
I was about 16. I was living with my aunt, and she had 2 kids. They were my niece and nephew or cousin or something. But they're about 4 years old, and she was friends with these 2 girls named Michelle. And one of them was fat, and one of them was skinny. So I used to decipher them by, you know, saying Fat Michelle or Skinny Michelle. Well, what?
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you, and it's an extraordinary pleasure to welcome someone who I've been aware of for many, many years, and seen his TV work, some of the 40 books that he's read. His name is David T. Suzuki, and Dr. Suzuki is the chair and founder of the David Suzuki Foundation, and he's had an 8-part series, Planet for the Taking, which won an award from the United Nations. You probably recall his 8-part PBS series, The Secret of Life, 5-part series, The Brain, for the Discovery Channel. He's done a lot on CBC Radio as well. And I could probably fill a good part of this show just with the incredible things that Dr. Suzuki has done and accomplished, much of it, in fact, almost all of it, in service to our planet. He's an internationally respected geneticist, and he was a full professor at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver from 1969 until his retirement in 2001. David Suzuki, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks for having me.
It sure doesn't sound like you're retired.
Well, I wanted to retire at 55, and then it was 60, and then 65, but now I'm saying 70. When I get to be 70, that's it. But the university retired me at 65, and I've got a whole lot of things I want to do, and then a lot of things I want to do in my retirement as well.
Well, I'll bet you I can call you in a few years, and you'll be saying, well, I'm going to make that 75. Well, here is a very interesting note, and as I said, there's so much that the David Suzuki Foundation and David Suzuki himself are involved in that I would advise you very strongly to go to his website. It's David Suzuki, and the last name is Suzuki, davidsuzuki.org. But one of the things that I pulled out of here in your biography, that you were born in Vancouver in 1936, and then during World War II, at the age of six, you were interned with your family in a camp in British Columbia. Now, I thought that's only occurred in the United States, that we interned Japanese and Japanese Americans.
Oh, no. It was, in fact, it was much worse in Canada than it was in the States, because at least in the States, as the war was coming to an end, you allowed the Japanese to go back to California or Washington or wherever they had come from. In British Columbia, the BC government didn't want to have any more Japanese. So as the war was coming to an end, they said, look, you've got two choices. You can renounce your citizenship and we'll give you a one-way trip to Japan, or get the hell out of the province. Now, my mother and father were both born and raised in Canada. They'd never been to Japan. So obviously it was, you know, that would have been going to a foreign country. And so we left the province and came out to Ontario.
Now, and you have a history then pretty close to our broadcast area here in Detroit.
Yes, that's right. We landed in Leamington, which is the home of Heinz Ketchup in Canada.
Right.
And it's big farming country. But for me as a boy, it was a magical, magical area, because Lake Erie at that time was this unbelievably productive lake. I don't know how long you've lived in Detroit, Peter. Have you lived there all your life?
All my life, yep.
Well, in 1946, when we went to Leamington, every spring there would be a hatch of mayflies off Lake Erie that was so massive that the flies would completely cover houses.
Huh.
And they would coat the highways, and cars would skid on their carcasses. But for me as a boy, I'd go down to the shore of Lake Erie, and the carcasses of the insects would pile up 3 and 4 feet thick on the beach. But you could take a rod and cast out. The fish were in a feeding frenzy. You could just pull one fish after another out of the lake. It was, and yet in 10 years that entire biomass was gone, killed by runoff from pesticides. But it was a very rich area. I could go on my bike from Leamington and go down to Point Pelee, mm-hmm. which is the southernmost part of Canada, and it's now a national park, which is a part of the great flyway of birds across the center part of North America.
Yeah, my wife and I frequently go there. There's actually a trash can there that has on it Canada's southernmost trash can.
Oh, man. We have to do, eh?
You know, David Suzuki, I'm certainly remiss. One of the reasons that I'm interviewing you is an incredible new book that you've co-authored. It's called Tree, A Life Story, and you've written it along with Wayne Grady, who's published 8 books of nonfiction himself, and it lives pretty close to us, Kingston, Ontario.
That's right.
As well. We'll get to the book. Let me just ask you a couple more questions. So you saw this degradation of the little bioregion that you lived in. Did that have anything to do with your subsequent interest in the environment?
Well, absolutely. All my life, it's been a history of camping and hiking and fishing. Particularly, my father was an avid fisherman and a gardener. He loved gathering trees and plants from the mountains and taking them back and growing them in the garden. I used to call him my mutant dad, because unlike most children of immigrants, he wasn't concerned with making money. His love was the out of doors, and so from my earliest memories are of camping with my dad in the mountains. And all my life, whether we moved to Leamington and suddenly, my God, there was nature everywhere, you know, because even in a ditch alongside the farms, there was all kinds of stuff in there. I was an avid insect collector. There were little fish. I had a freshwater aquarium there with catfish and sunfish and all the baby carp that I would grow and small turtles, snapping turtles. I just had a wonderful time wherever I went. When I went to London 3 years later from Leamington, it was the same thing. There was the Thames River, and there were lakes and ponds all over the place, and that's been the story of my life. And you know, every scientist I know began life in some way being fascinated in some way with nature. I know Carl Sagan was always interested in stars from the time he was a young kid. Paul Ehrlich was an avid butterfly collector. E.O. Wilson from Harvard started off as, he was interested in ants. The fascination with nature leads us into a career in science and environmentalism.
What did you think you were going to be? In other words...
I first wanted to be an ichthyologist because I was an avid fisherman. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be great to be a scientist and be able to eat your experiment when it was over? But then my mother made me a butterfly net, and I became an avid insect collector around Leamington, actually. I loved beetles, and so I thought, gee, I'd love to be an entomologist. But it was when I went away to college, I went to Amherst College in Massachusetts, and it was there that, as a biology honors student, I had to take genetics, and absolutely fell in love with genetics, and then there was no turning back from that point on.
My guest is David Suzuki, and he and Wayne Grady have written Tree, A Life Story. I promise you I will get to this. Actually, one other question occurred to me. I have a friend and an associate who is from a Japanese background, as you are, and her parents were also interned, but in the United States. And I asked her, how did that mark his life? And she told me he never mentioned, he actually went on to great prominence, which I can tell you after the interview, but I think it would be inappropriate to say on the air. But she said he never mentioned it. Was this anything that ever affected you or your parents?
Profoundly, absolutely profoundly. But it's funny, the people that were adults that went into the camps, they tended to put it behind them and not mention it, even though they were deeply scarred. For my parents, who were in their early 30s at the time, had come through the Depression, had started a little business, a dry cleaning business, it was absolutely shattering for them because their whole faith in Canada, they were Canadians. They had never been to Japan, and to be suddenly treated like an enemy was absolutely devastating. But for me as a child, it left me with a lifelong hatred of the way I look, because all the propaganda said, you know, slant-eyed people that look like me were the enemy and were deceitful and, you know, we're not to be trusted. And even though I've been in television since 1962, to this day, I'm very uncomfortable looking at myself on television because I don't like what I see.
David, if this helps any, I think you're a very handsome man. But on the other hand, almost all of us are our worst critics, and the times I've seen myself on television, I go, Let's get to your book, or we'll totally run out of time. It's called Tree, A Life Story, and it traces a Douglas fir from when it the seed first germinates to 500 years into its life. It's all there, isn't it?
Yeah, well, people ask me, well, why the hell are you writing a book about a tree? You're an animal guy, and it's true. I have a degree in zoology. I'm not a plant person, and I'd always kind of taken trees for granted. But my theme that I've been spouting for years and years now is that in the natural world, in the real world that we're still a part of, everything is connected to everything else. So whatever you do, you have to think about the consequences because it has repercussions, and therefore we have responsibilities. And most people live in the world and they don't see that anything is connected. You know, you drive a sport utility vehicle and you may have a child with asthma, and it would never occur to you that your lifestyle, your choice of your decision is affecting your child in that way. We buy clothes, we never think of where were the plants grown for the cotton or the wool, and How much chemicals did they use to grow them? We buy computers, cars, TV sets. We never think, gee, mining is a very destructive activity. What were all the metals in these products? Where were they mined, and what was the environmental effect? I'm trying to rejoin people back to the world. And so I thought if I could take a tree, a single plant, and show that that plant connects us to the entire world, indeed takes us right back to the beginning of time at the Big Bang and to the evolution of life on this planet, then maybe people would get the idea of the exquisite interconnectedness of everything. So I wanted to do a celebration of that tree and show it how it's linked to everything else through the air that it cleanses, through the water that it contains, gathers in its roots, through the animals and plants that feed on it and live in it. All of that I tried to picture in this celebration of one life.
Mm-hmm. And there's what, a little Zen aphorism that says the whole world is in a grain of rice. So whether it's in a small little piece of the product of a plant or something as large and magnificent as a Douglas fir, it's all there everywhere, even in your SUV.
Yes, that's right. So we've got to put it all back together again. And, you know, I think one of the most beautiful stories in the book is about the way that this huge tree is made possible because of the nitrogen that it gets, not from the soil. Well, it does get it from the soil, but the Tibet rainforest is very poor in nitrogen because it rains a lot and washes the nitrogen away. And one of the big puzzles was, how the hell can you get these huge trees when there's so little nitrogen in the soil? Well, it turns out that the salmon that go out to sea and gather nitrogen to grow, when they come back, the bears and the wolves and the eagles eat the salmon. They run through the woods and poop all over the place. That represents the biggest single pulse of nitrogen fertilizer the forest gets all year. So the salmon connect the forest to the oceans, and the oceans are, you know, make possible these rich forests, and we better start remembering that.
Well, I was just going to say, as you said that, my heart sunk when I thought about salmon and bears and how many are with us and how long will they be with us.
Exactly, and the forest industry would never think that maybe the future of forests and how rich and healthy they are is dependent on protecting the oceans and the bears as well. You know, we tend to look at the forest as just, well, the trees, you know, the Minister of Forestry will take care of that, and, well, the eagles and the bears and the wolves, they're the Department of the Environment, and the water is the Department of Agriculture or Energy, and the mountains are the Department of Mines, and, you know, we tend to look at it in this fragmented way, and we think we can manage it properly, but we never will.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, this may even be your expression, but often in my writing, I use the phrase web of life. And,
yes.
And that, for, did I steal that from you?
No, it's much older than you or me.
My guest is Dr. David Suzuki, and he is the host of many PBS and CBC broadcast programs and has written Tree, A Life Story, along with Wayne Grady for Greystone Press, available probably almost everywhere. And again, I would advise you to go to his website, David Suzuki, S-U-Z-U-K-I. It'll also be on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. It'd be nice one of these days. Maybe we'll all have names like Smith and Jones, and we won't have to spell them, but from, or like Kim.
Suzuki isn't so bad. Werbe just sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, but people are, well, all right, no, we don't need to go into it. Maybe my question is probably an obvious one. I was going to say, why the Douglas fir? Maybe in answering that, you should describe, because there's not any around here, why the Douglas fir and a description of it?
Well, the Douglas fir, of course, is one of the great icons of the West Coast. It's part of the coastal temperate rainforest that has the highest biomass, the weight of living things, of any ecosystem on the planet. And that's because there are all these big Douglas firs and hemlock and cedar and spruce and sequoias that grow along the West Coast. And when Europeans first arrived in British Columbia, the Douglas fir was one of the most impressive trees that they saw. These trees will rise 270, 300 feet above the earth. They can live to over 1,000 years, and they dominate this particular part in time on the coast. Of course, they've been a tremendous target for the forest industry, and we've cleared most of them out in the United States, but they remain a very vital part of the British Columbia forests.
And how big did they get?
They get up to 270 to 300 feet tall.
So that's like a 30-story building.
That's a huge tree.
Yeah. And
I don't remember what the record was for the circumference, but it would certainly be well over 30 feet in circumference. I think we tell in the story there were something like 12 or 18 couples square danced on the stump of one Douglas fir.
You'll hear sometimes conservative commentators say that people like yourself, David Suzuki, and me, Peter Werby, we're chicken littles, that the sky isn't falling, that every year many, many more trees are planted than are felled by loggers, and we're just trying to overexcite people.
Yeah, I thought that argument went out a long time
ago.
Now
you keep hearing it.
But, you know, first of all, a forest is a very complex community of organisms, and only nature has ever grown a forest. We have foresters that think when they plant trees with these genetically selected fast-growing trees that they're growing another forest. Well, of course, it's a plantation. It's not a forest. And we have no idea. I can guarantee your audience that the trees that grow up in a plantation are nothing like the ones that are being cut down. That's why over 95% of the trees being cut down in British Columbia today are still from old growth forests. They're not from plantations, because the plantation trees, they're certainly selected to grow faster, and they give them a lot of fertilizer and pesticides, but the fibers are much shorter. They're much poorer material for pulp, and they're much poorer material for lumber, because they grow very fast, and the wood isn't as tight and strong. There isn't the same tensile strength in these plantation trees as there is in the old growth trees. We're growing a much more inferior product, but the idea that we know what we're doing can destroy a community in the forest and regrow a forest is absurd.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel comfortable even using the term product when you refer to the forest?
I do. I think of the forest as a community of organisms. I see the other species, whether they're plant or animal, as our biological kin. You know, one of the shocking and uplifting results of the Human Genome Project, where, you know, this incredible achievement of deciphering the entire 3 billion letters in the DNA of a human cell, that great achievement is not going to lead to all of these great products and cures for disease and all that stuff. But what it did tell us right away was that there are 99% of the genes in our human genome are identical to the genes in chimpanzees, that we carry hundreds of genes identical to genes in fish and insects and trees and other plants. What the Human Genome Initiative showed was that all other life on Earth is our biological kin. These are not resources. They're our relatives.
Mm-hmm.
And surely we treat our relatives in a much more respectful way than we have. After all, because of our relatives, this diversity of living things, we have clean air. You know, if we didn't have plants, we wouldn't have an air that you and I can breathe. It was plants that began to take carbon dioxide out of the air and put oxygen back into it. And if it wasn't for all the plants in the world, the atmosphere would be unbreathable. It's plants that are a part of what filters the water so that we can drink it, that create soil, that provide food that we can eat, that capture sunlight in photosynthesis. So we depend on our relatives for the very things that we need to survive. We ought to treat them with greater respect.
Well, David Suzuki, your work, your publishing work, your broadcast work has been so inspiring to those of us who care about the planet very directly. I mean, I think if you asked anybody, they would say they would. But people that recognize the problem, you've done so much on that. And you've also suggested ways that we, even as individuals, can begin to address the problems we're facing. Yeah, and years ago, I always thought people that talked about overpopulation were even a little fascistic. But can we have any of the reforms that we want when one species so dominates the surface of the
planet?
Well,
I think, you know, there are a number of responses to that. First of all, the UN says that we're going to reach 10 billion by the middle of the century. I really, really wonder whether we're going to hit that. But it's clear that the ecological footprint, the impact of 6.2 billion people on Earth is way beyond what can be sustained indefinitely. So what do we do about that? Well, it turns out that the major predators within the human population are not the Chinese and the Indians and the other overpopulated areas. They're in the industrial countries because each of us uses much more of everything than people do in Africa or India or China. You know, if you want to compare America with China, you have to multiply your population by 40 in order to come up with the Chinese or Indian equivalents of your population. Or you have to multiply by 80 or 100 to get the Somalian or Bangladeshi equivalents of our population. So when you start realizing that it's not just a matter of numbers, but how much each of us uses, we are the overpopulated countries. And yet, where in America do you see anybody saying, hey, that's enough, we've got more than we need.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we have to have more and bigger and all that stuff? And yet after 9/11, the first public statement Mr. Bush made to the American people was, I want Americans to go out and buy more stuff, shop, to keep the economy going. After that terrible, terrible event, is that the best we can do? I think we really ought to be asking ourselves, why do we need all this stuff? It all comes out of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're done with it, we'll throw it back into the earth as garbage. Why do we need all this stuff? And you know what the terrifying thing is? All the Chinese and all the Indians want exactly what we've got. And as long as we continue to say we've got to have more, the economy's got to be kept growing, they're going to want to keep doing it every bit as much as we are. And then the planet is toast. If we care about the future and our children, we've got to set a model for India and China because they are going to be the dominant economies in the next decade or two.
Now, we just have about a minute left, and we didn't even get to everything that the David Suzuki Foundation has accomplished. I mean, you have done things like leading the drive to have the Kyoto Protocol ratified.
Two things I'd suggest.
Okay.
Please go to my website at davidsuzuki.org. You'll see on there a thing called the Nature Challenge, and that's we're asking the public now in Canada to please look at the Nature Challenge. It's the 10 most effective things each of us can do to begin to reduce our impact on the earth. We've got 130,000 Canadians signed up, agreed to do at least 3 of the 10 things in the coming year. I want to get 1 million Canadians, and then it will be unstoppable. Look at our other part called Sustainability Within a Generation, which says, where do we want Canada to be by 2030? Do we want a Canada with clean air so that you don't have epidemic levels of asthma? Everybody agrees. Do we want Canada to have rivers and lakes that you can drink out of anytime? Yes. Do we want to be able to catch a fish and eat it without worrying about what's in it? Yes. When you start asking, what do we want the country to be like? Everybody agrees. And then it turns out, looking at the target or the goal we want to achieve, when we break it down into 9 areas of transportation, food, housing, agriculture, it turns out if we start looking at that target, we can achieve that if we start acting now for a sustainable future.
David Suzuki, and we have 30 seconds. Are you hopeful about the future?
Of course. You
really?
Always have to have hope, but every day we're going down the wrong direction.
The book is Tree, A Life Story, David Suzuki and co-writer Wayne Grady. Again, you can go to davidsuzuki.org. It's S-U-Z-U-K-I. I will have it on my site as well, peterwerby.com. And David Suzuki, it was wonderful spending time with you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Peter. It's been great talking to you. I hope we talk again.